Hey, 4Play listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Yeah.
4Play, presented by Barstool Sports. We are live from the driving range here at the PGA Championship 2022, and I think that the phrasing we're using is we have a jam-packed episode of 4Play leading into the year's second major championship. We have one of the hotter men in the streets in terms of golf journalism and golf headlines right now, Alan Shipnuck, whose book on Phil Mickelson came out this week. His quotes from that book, his excerpts in February, basically, for the time being, ended Phil's public golf career. So we have nearly an hour. I think it's 50 minutes straight with Alan Shipnuck into everything about Phil. And then also we have our boy Adrian from TaylorMade Golf, who goes into all the equipment choices that players are making, including in insane detail on Tiger Woods, and then Tommy Fleetwood joins the show with him to go through it. So I wanted to get that in, Trent, but go ahead.
The rip-roaring biography, unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar.
Is the name
of mouthful.
The book.
I believe that's the name of it. We go over that a lot with Alan, but I just wanted people to know off the top what that book is called. And it's a good book.
Alan was a great guest. You know, I just 3 weeks ago talked about how, you know, books bore me from time to time, and I like to watch movies. And obviously, when it comes to biographies, you need books because
you are anti-books a little bit.
Could turn into a documentary.
Fahrenheit 451.
If I start recommending books to you, you think you'd read them?
I told you I haven't finished it, but that Dave Grohl book I was reading while I was arguing about not liking books, I had the book in my hotel room.
That's right.
Can you recommend books to me? I like books.
Okay.
I want to read that one book where they go to Mars. And I keep forgetting the name of it. Everyone says it's right up my alley. Anyway, Alan Shipnuck was great for an author and like a nerd guy that I thought was going to be nerdy. He was fucking awesome. Super down to earth, really cool guy. I could talk to that guy for hours, even though I didn't really talk much in the interview because I did not read the book yet.
He's also the side of this world that we're just not. And it's good to have different perspectives on this show. Like we talked about last show, how we show up to these majors, these events with no plan and just hope good things are going to happen. And then they sometimes do when we get to hang out with Tiger Woods for an hour.
True.
But then there's guys like Alan and there's guys like Danny Rapoport and Dylan DeCher who are here hunting for stories and have a plan on what to do. And it's just good to get that into the mix a little bit just to see what that side is like.
And they're necessary, right?
Big time.
Those guys are incredibly necessary and they are not part of the guard that has been opposing of us arriving. They've very much embraced us on the scene.
Yeah, there was some confusion with the old man golf stuff when that was all happening. That like we don't like traditional like print media.
I just said how to Bones. Well,
you did just say how to Bones. We talked to Bones on the range yesterday.
I just said Bones
got us waters. He walked over, didn't even ask us, came back and handed each one of us waters.
Yeah, Hideki Matsuyama
with incredibly calm demeanor. I would say Bones
is so cool. But there's
hold on, right, wait.
There was a little bit with that old man golf media stuff that
Hideki.
The people didn't think that we liked
Frankie
traditional.
Just tried to, all right,
and
he got literally next.
No,
the
less
only
than
thing,
nothing.
The only
just problem behind
we
you,
had
Brandon. Behind you, Brandon.
Was that we? They
all
attacked
right.
us
over here, over here, over here.
They attacked
okay.
us.
You were making me nervous.
Old man media attacked us.
What's going on here?
You just held. He held the camera on. You're continuously just talking about old man media, but we
yeah, because I don't.
I'm just in our crew right now.
Yeah, but he's not coming over here.
No, I know. I was just talking about our surroundings, and for the people on YouTube, they were watching.
That's
chip.
True.
It's fucking insane.
My point is, we don't need it anymore.
I kind of lost my train of thought there. The interview with Alan Shipnuck is phenomenal.
It
is. He's a very human. He's a human guy. And what I say by that is, like, when you're writing books about somebody, if you're not very much attached to like humanity and reality, it could be easy to kind of skewer people. And we get a lot into what that process is like and the empathy that's required and that he sort of exercised in writing the book. I thought that part was phenomenal.
Agreed.
We talk about the off the record, on the record stuff. That stuff is phenomenal. We get into Phil Mickelson. Obviously, it's glaring that he's not here. Every player that's done an interview has been asked about that. The word that they've all been used is pretty much sad. They're all calling it sad that Phil's not here. So that's a huge storyline. And we talk, obviously, a ton about Phil with Alan Shipnuck. And he's done a great job of, yes, being part of the legitimate journalistic writing crew, while also now, you know, spinning that off into the Fire Pit Collective with him, Matt Janella, telling stories in a much more modern way. They've guys have done a phenomenal job. So having Shipnuck's on, awesome. His book, Phil, the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar.
Fucking crushed it.
That is now available. So go buy that and read it. Trent and I read it. Frankie didn't.
I was on a bachelor party.
And then Adrian.
Would you have read it if you didn't have a bachelor party?
I would have skimmed through it.
Okay.
Adrian Rietveld. Is that how you say his last name? Who's the man who comes on and talks all about equipment. He's a golf nut. That stuff is so fascinating. Decisions these guys make. He talks about actually how important it is for even the average golfer like us to get fitted, because they pretty much with one swing, even if you think you're inconsistent, there's no way I might be one player on Monday and another player on Tuesday. They actually just instantly get a mold of what your swing is like and what your tendencies are like, and can fit you to the best clubs. TaylorMade's the best at that in the world. They have the number one golfer in the world, which is a good friend of ours, Scottie Scheffler, the Masters champ. They have Tiger Woods, the best player to ever play the game. They have Rory, who our guy, you're not going to believe Adrian's reaction when we talk about Rory's chances this week.
If you don't watch this podcast on YouTube, if you are just a Spotify, iTunes person, that's fine. But this time around, go to the timestamp of watching.
What are we, like, about 6 minutes in, five minutes and 30 seconds in, go to YouTube.
Go to that, and then, but I want them to see Adrian's. Shit. I want them to see.
I got that fucked up.
I want them
you to have see, to go when he comes on.
I want them to see Adrian's face when he talks about Rory McIlroy. So watch this one on YouTube if you get a chance.
Watch it on YouTube. Check it out.
And not then, in 5 minutes and 30 seconds.
And there's a lot of things that have gone on that we have to get to as well.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
And then we also have Dustin Johnson video that came out. That's not in this podcast. That's on YouTube, and it's just available right now. We have DJ show us how to get stingers. Somebody tweeted at me a very funny video of my reaction to one of his stingers, and I was just jumping up and down because it was so awesome. But he rips stingers, and then he plays against us in a rematch. He plays left-handed.
Used my golf clubs, which was pretty wild, something I forgot happened until we rewatched the video. I kind of was just carrying my golf bag, and he's like, can I get a 60-degree? And I just, like, handed him mine, and he's using it, and he's, like, looking at him and handing him back. And he's like, you like this putter? And all this kind of wild. So, again, these videos are so insane that you forget that they happen. It's like you have to remind yourself what the fuck is actually going on around here that we played again against Dustin Johnson.
And even, like, we're so busy this week and most weeks where, like, we're at the PGA Championship. We were doing the Tulsa Tango last night, which was an incredible event. Seemed like everybody had a blast. And then, like, as that's going on, I'm like, oh, yeah, we have a Dustin Johnson video coming out as well. It's just the boys are doing a lot all the time, so we do get desensitized sometimes. But please go watch that Dustin Johnson
video. We've had a dominant week. We've had a dominant week.
Yeah. Tiger Woods, obviously. We took over the world.
We've been doing kind of a victory lap for a few days.
Yeah, but then, like you're saying, we were at the Tulsa Tango, at the Fortune Golf course, under the lights. It was like 8 o'clock at night. And while that's happening, we have how many people? It was like 120 golfers, just like a last-minute tournament that we put on. It was like the most insane thing ever. Two-man scramble par 3 tournament. As that's all happening, I'm looking out at all these hundreds of golfers that are playing with us. Yeah, we're playing with Dustin Johnson on YouTube live at that point. I'm just like, how the fuck is all this happening right now? It's kind of a mind fuck. So,
there's Ian Poulter just walked by. You want to have him on the show?
Ian Poulter just walked by. Looked right at us. He's pretty tall, huh? He is pretty tall. And he always has like a backpack on. He never looks like any of the other guys where he looks like the guy that's like part of the team.
Not the guy that the team is around.
100%. Yeah. Which I actually kind of like that about him, that he's like, you know.
I think if he came over here, he'd punch me in the face.
I don't think so.
Yeah, dude, we had Trevor Immelman's. So, yeah, I'll text him. I'll get him on the show. And then he looked up like 30 seconds later. He's like, he's never going to do the show. He hates you guys.
You know, like, we need something to like bridge the gap. We need to learn about like Ferraris or like F1. Like, we really need to learn how to
like berate, you know.
How about this? Next tournament that we go to, wear a Ferrari hat.
Okay.
Maybe do a little bit of research. I know you don't like reading, but.
A Ferrari F1.
What's your favorite team, F1?
I don't have an allegiance yet.
I became a huge Lewis Hamilton fan.
Yeah.
But that's because I thought he got so fucked at the end of last year.
Yeah.
I'm not caught up.
That's okay.
Okay. That's okay. I just didn't want any spoilers.
No. I mean, it's an, yeah, I wouldn't say I it's necessarily a spoiler. Yeah.
I don't know that you can do that with like live sports.
I think that's different. Really? I think the F1 is different because think it's about
like live every weekend.
It happened like a year
over
ago.
Twitter.
Okay. All right. I'm feeling attacked, but.
Like Logan Spence like blogs about it every single week.
No, okay. But think about this. Think about when you first started watching the show. That stuff had already happened and you didn't know anything
about
it. Right.
That's why I said I think it's a little different with sports, but
it's the same thing.
Okay, but that was far enough in the past. It was like 5 years ago.
What's
the same show? But when the show first comes on, it came out a couple years, people started watching it like after all that stuff had happened.
Well, I thought you meant like think about when you're watching a show, like fucking Ozark.
No, this one's different.
Talking about this specific, very specific documentary series.
I know. Okay.
I think something that happened within the last 6-8 months, I don't know that you can really blame us for a spoiler, because like it was a live sporting
Lewis Hamilton event. Was the driver of the year, and you don't want to know any of that information because you haven't watched the Netflix recap of it.
That's fucking insane.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
I'm just saying that I think there's probably people out there who watch that show that don't watch the F1 races.
Okay, but don't watch it. But like, you're gonna see it on Twitter.
With that
people
choice,
are like reacting to it
by
on Twitter.
Not watching the F1 races. You now have given up your right to not get spoiled because it's an F1 race. I'm not trying to spoil you.
I'm just saying that I'm not gonna feel bad if you get it because it happened in real life like 6 months ago.
It's like saying like you've chosen to not watch Ozark for like a year and then get mad when people are like spoiling it. I would say a year for a regular TV show. That's how in the moment F1 is.
I don't agree with that whatsoever.
It's also sport. like whoever on did TV. Won or lost that race was on like SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. Like that just happens.
It's TV.
You know?
I know.
You don't see what we're saying?
What I'm saying is that when you first started watching this show, it's that situation.
But my point to that was that it was so far in the past that I think, right, like when I started watching it, it was like 4 years ago. So clearly I haven't.
You don't want to give people that same chance?
I want to give them a chance, but I don't think I should have to feel bad if that chance gets ruined because like it's a real talking point in contemporary
society.
For us
not being F1 fans and we watch Drive to Survive, we don't have the right now to be like if we're talking to an F or someone that actually watches F1, we can't be like, oh, I just started watching this show, so don't tell me anything that's happened in the last 4 years of sport. They're going to be like, what do you, like, that's not my fault that you didn't watch sport. You haven't watched.
I think that's totally
event
fair.
That's happened every weekend.
Like, I think that's totally fair.
Really?
Like if someone brought up Game of Thrones.
So then you should not watch the NFL and then watch Tom Brady's documentary that comes out on ESPN Plus and be like, don't tell me what happened in the Super Bowl.
No, because that's a very popular U.S. sport. I'm saying everyone's pretty new to
this.
It's
bigger than football. Yeah, they're doing like 2 Grand Prix now in the U.S.
But not here, I'm saying.
You have this look
well, not
in
Tulsa,
face
no,
like,
but like.
You're going to start
No,
crying.
Don't be an asshole. Don't be a fucking asshole, all right? Don't condescend him. He's not in Tulsa. Cut his fucking mic off. All I'm saying.
I'm trying to
get angry.
Don't
get angry.
I didn't get much sleep last night, if we're being honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I just couldn't sleep.
Do you have a Snickers? Can someone get this guy a Snickers? You're not yourself when you're hungry.
Bones will get you one again.
Not yourself when you're hungry.
Let's move on. I was right.
So a couple things I want to touch on. Picks for this week. We're all going to hammer roar, and you'll hear why in a few minutes.
Oh, my God.
And then I have to shout out Kirk Minahan, who said Sam Burns, Cameron Young, and Davis Riley. That's a group that's going off tomorrow morning. He said someone from this group will win the tournament. Now, the only reason I bring that up, I texted back and said, you're a delusional moron. But he's been really hot this year. And a few people have called. Like, he does calls on his show. And Kirk's golf obsessed. So if people call in. One guy hit him with like, I think it was for the Valspar, hit him just randomly with, Kirk, who's going to be the lowest European finish this week? And he just goes, Matthew Fitzpatrick, book it. And it was Matthew Fitzpatrick, like, in a landslide.
Bam!
And then, like, he, that same week, they were like, who do you like to win? And he's like, man, Sam Burns. Sam Burns won that tournament back-to-back years. So, like, the only reason I'm throwing that out there, yes, I think he's a moron. He also said Tiger Woods could miss the cut. But I want people to be aware that he's been pretty hot this year, and he threw those picks out there. Are we agreeing that we're all going to at least sprinkle something on Scottie Scheffler because we're pissed that we didn't at the Masters and he was the most obvious choice in the world, and
right
then he
now,
just won it?
Wednesday at whatever time it is, 2 o'clock. What time is it?
Pretty close. 257.
257. He's plus 1,100, I think, in the Barstool Sportsbook.
Would you consider that pretty close?
Yeah.
Well, gauging off the fact that we have no idea what time is. I don't even know what time we got here. Like, we've been here for 3 hours, 4 hours. I have no idea. Look at the sun. I have a buddy that was in the Boy Scouts, and he could tell the time by putting his hand to the horizon and how many fingers went up to the sun. You could go off when the sun's going to set, and every finger is like an hour or half hour.
Sounds like
depending on what time of year?
Huh?
Does it change on what time of year?
Dude,
because isn't the sun goes across a different angle depending on what time
of year?
He
wasn't really in our friend group. He played baseball with us when we were younger.
Sounds
like
a
nerd. Baseball over the fence, like, and we have to go get it. Like, can't throw the baseball over the fence while we're in the game.
I'd like to say yesterday we hung out with Joey LaCava for like an hour, and that guy is the best man in the world. I love him so much.
I don't know that I've ever met someone that I've liked more.
You guys are perfect for each other.
You two
are.
We
just like gel and we connect, and I'm not the biggest like eye contact guy. I struggle with like keeping contact with people, especially E-Bug's got a good. He's got a good looking face. And
I know someone here. I know someone who's not here. Who's a huge eye contact guy.
Oh, Lurch. Huge. Fucking drives me crazy.
He's behind the wheel
especially
mostly.
While he's driving.
Well, like specifically when he's out. Driving. But Joey will
eye contact with everyone in the vehicle.
He just,
no matter what seat
he locks you in. Like when he says something to you, you're like, oh shit, I'm in the zone now. And we just, I don't know. He's a Northeast guy. He's a huge Rangers fan, Giants fan, Yankees fan. And I just think he loves sports so much, loves all the draft picks and college picks and all the guys coming up in the Rangers system. And I know a lot about that stuff. So I'm able to connect with him rather than someone else.
He kind of smiles as he says everything.
He does, yeah. He makes you feel good.
Yeah, it's like this is a positive interaction.
And he's like, let's golf. I have a couple months off in between, like, you know, majors and stuff.
You're like, with me? You want to play golf with me?
Yeah, he literally said, like, I'm playing next week. You want to play? I was like, I'm at the fucking Barstool Classic, but I can just change my schedule.
I'll just not be at the Barstool
Classic. Yeah, he's just the nicest guy of all time. We also talked to SVP today.
We did, yeah.
Who equally has that same aura around him where everything he says, you just want to make sure you're paying attention to because he's the nicest guy ever. He's so well thoughtful and he's well informed and he just wants.
Just another guy from like my childhood. Not even childhood, like
I went
just
to sleep,
my teenage years.
I went to sleep watching SVP when he got that midnight hour.
Yeah.
Is SVP the top sports media figure in the country?
Probably Charles Barkley, I think Trent would say.
I think it's Barkley.
But I think SVP's
I think they're
right
close.
Up there.
I think they're close.
SVP has the midnight.
In terms of overall star power,
prime time, ESPN, his own show.
He's a superstar. I'm not. When I say Barkley, I'm not taking anything away from SVP because he's a legend and a superstar. I think it's close. I think those two are very close.
I think Chuck is like my favorite.
Stephen A. Smith is up there.
I think SVP is though just like
yes,
like Stephen A. Smith is a caricature, right? To a degree,
he's huge.
No, he's huge. I'm not saying he's not, but he's a bit of a caricature. SVP is just SVP.
Yes,
he's himself. He interviews everyone.
Yep.
He right. Non-athlete, he delivers and anchors everything. Like he is just he's as big as it gets. When I saw you guys talking to him, I was like, whoa. Yeah.
Every time he's one of those guys where every time I'm talking to him, I'm like, I can't believe I'm talking to this guy.
And dude, he knows about us.
He did. He talked to you about the Isles,
dude,
Borelli's.
We're not even wearing – you're wearing a Barstool Transfusion thing, but, you know, and Stanford Steve, I've gone out for drinks with him, so I knew that he was going to remember us. He's a big Barstool guy, big cat guy. They both are, but we dapped him up, and I'm like, oh, he's not going to fucking remember us. Like, we had a half-an-hour conversation with him last year at Kiwa. The guy talks sports every single night for a living and meets a billion people. First thing he says to me is, he's like, man, we're missing your Islanders runs at Borelli's with Stu. I'm like, holy fucking shit, man. It's Scott Van Pelt. That's
him and I got into a disagreement that I wish he would come on the podcast we could talk about with the golf shots.
Yeah, you did. And I also wanted to, I was almost going to do this thing to tell him how big a fan I am of him. I used to tweet at him, where in the world is SVP, when I see a bald guy wearing headphones. And I think one time he retweeted, it was like the biggest moment of my life.
That's awesome.
I have to go back and look on my Twitter, but that's how big of a fan I am that he does shit like that, that I used to do shit like that with him. But yes, you guys did get into a huge debate. Where he was like taking his glasses off and looking at you, being like, you know, he goes, what's going on?
There's a spider on your trip.
What a day.
Dude, just fucking just hit him.
I hate spiders.
Just take it.
He's really
neck.
Close to your chin, actually.
Where is it?
He's on your. Well, you got to find him.
Somebody.
Look down.
I don't see it,
am I looking at two friends
or
no?
Oh, yeah.
Am I looking at two friends or no? All right.
We did that for content. We had to do that.
All right.
You guys got into a debate.
He's riding your lanyard.
Do guys scoreboard watch?
Yeah, so who's the tour pro that we had on recently? Because we've always had tour pros on and we ask, do you scoreboard watch? And they almost, you can barely finish the question before they say, yeah, you have to, you got to know where you're at. And then someone had said, play the shots to its merits. Doesn't matter. You just have to respect the shot and play it. And that's the best way to do it. And I thought that was interesting. And I brought that up to SVP. And he said, yeah, that only goes so far though because, and he brought up the example of the Heat played the Celtics last night. And if the Heat are down by two or three, like they got to know what kind of shot they need here at the end. So it was an interesting debate, and I get what he's saying, but I would like to, I'd like to talk more about it with him.
You had a nice debate with SVP.
Yeah,
glasses
great.
Came off. They were cleaning them while they're talking.
Oh wow, both of them.
Huge glasses.
These were having a glass
guy
glasses
move.
Cleaning off.
When you start taking your glasses off and you start cleaning them as you're talking about something, you're really in a debate.
I should have taken my glass off, started cleaning them.
No, that's what I thought
you know
you were going to have
like,
a glasses
a,
off cleaning.
Like, all right,
contest.
Now we're really talking.
Seinfeld's got this old joke where he says, anybody, it's hard to win an argument with somebody who's smoking a cigarette because once they finish the cigarette, throw it down, stomp on it, they're like, and they make their last point and then they walk away. It's something like that. I don't mean to.
Good because that's exactly, I think when someone takes their glasses off and starts to clean them on their chest, on their shirt, I think whatever they're saying is 10 times more valuable than had it, they not done
that. That says I'm about to put a lot of thought into this next thing.
Big time.
And then think about me watching it happen, and it's SVP. Guy yeah. who knows more about sports than maybe anybody on the planet.
That's conversational dominance. Me,
right? Like an older guy going like,
yeah,
you know. I'm like, and he's just thinking back.
And I'm thinking it's going to be hard to refute whatever point this guy makes.
You know, I just... He puts some fucking breath on him and cleans him.
I was like,
I don't know about that, Trent.
That's literally what he did.
Yeah.
All right.
You're in trouble at that point.
Yeah, it was good, though. I'd love to have him on the show and we can talk about it.
Love to. So we're going to throw it to these interviews here in a second. We're going to talk about Play Golf Myrtle Beach, which people have now been hitting us up hearing whispers that we're about to go to Myrtle Beach here this summer and play a bunch of golf. Every time we bring this up, I get more and more jacked up for Myrtle Beach because I think we're not going to just play golf, even though it's the golf capital of the world. I want to hit like a wave runner. I want to see like a shock.
I want to see everything. I want to see everything Myrtle Beach has to offer, and I think that's what's going to happen to us.
Dude, Myrtle Beach, I think, has like gators, sharks, oceanfront property, top 100 courses, munis, beaches.
Everything.
Sand volleyball. Can we play sand volleyball?
What are you saying?
Beach volleyball.
Volleyball?
Volleyball.
Sand volleyball.
Volleyball.
I thought it just sounded, it hit my ear.
Volleyball?
It's sand volleyball. Volleyball.
Beach volleyball.
I was going on my Instagram, and man, it's been getting crazy with like the suggested for you posts on Instagram where it's like I feel like I'm following these accounts. You can mute those, whatever. I didn't want to mute this one because it was a Myrtle Beach account. It wasn't Myrtle Beach golf, it was another Myrtle Beach account, but they were showing this one golf hole of a guy. Basically, it was behind the green style where in the morning he was just cutting the green. And it was just right in the middle of this huge pond. It almost looked like TPC Sawgrass. And I was just like, man, that place, like there's just thousands of golf courses like that in that area. And it's amazing the quality of courses. Man. It's not just the quantity, it's the quality as well. No matter where you book, you're going to have like an outrageous experience.
It is the golf capital of the world and is the home to the Whack-A-Mole Golf Trail.
Wow.
The Whack-A-Mole Golf Trail features 11 of the most sought after courses in Myrtle Beach area. From famed designers Gary Player, friend of the program, Tom Fazio, Jack Nicklaus, and Mike Strantz. Two of the courses on the Whack-A-Mole Golf Trail, TBC Myrtle Beach, and True Blue Golf Club have been ranked among the top public golf courses in the country. And the 4Play crew, yours truly, are going to be featuring these courses in our upcoming trip to Myrtle Beach later this year. Get the best deals and discounts on lodging and golf when booking your trip through mygolftrail.com. Visit mygolftrail.com and receive a free round of golf. You are welcome on the Whack-A-Mole Golf Trail in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So we have, next up, Adrian Rietveld, who is from TaylorMade. He's one of their top guys when it comes to equipment at events. He's all over. He's on that truck. He's dealing with Tiger and Rory and Tommy and all these guys. Tommy Fleetwood joins this conversation. We're going to throw it to Adrian. We're going to come back. We're going to do a little bit of From the Gallery, and then we're going to throw it to Alan Shipnuck. And then we're going to go have ourselves a great tournament weekend in Scottsdale, which, by the way, if you're listening to this show and you are in the Arizona area, make sure Casa Amigos, bar, restaurant, awesome spot, fun, from around 11 a.m. on until the end of the coverage, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we are going to do live stream and we're going to do a PGA Championship watch party with Owens Mixers at Casa Amigos in Scottsdale. Lurch is going to rejoin the crew.
Oh.
We're going to be there. Producers are going to be there. I
thought we were going to have more room on our logos.
Jake Bass and Brendan Jones are going to be there. Trent Ryan, Frankie Borelli, Riggs, Lurch.
I can't believe I'm going back to Scottsdale. I want to go back to Scottsdale. I do. I want to watch the PGA Championship.
Hannah Cook going
to
be there?
Hannah Cook's going to be there for the Barstool Classic on Monday and Tuesday.
She'll be there for the Barstool Classic.
I'm just...
She must be busy.
I'm just... It's hot, man. It's hot there. And it's hot here. And I just, you know...
You don't really have to say anything right now. We could just throw it to the interview.
Just letting you know, it's going to be hot.
No, it's going to be hot.
No doubt.
Be a dry heat. Here's Adrian. Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined live from the PGA Championship here at Southern Hills. Our, I would say Adrian is now our major championship. Yeah, TaylorMade Equipment Consultant. What's your actual title?
I'm the Senior Manager for Tour at TaylorMade Golf.
Okay, yeah. We're going to go
whatever
with...
Whatever that is, yeah, whatever that
We're
going to
go with the Barstool Golf... Major Championship Equipment Consultant.
I would love Barstool in my job title.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. We can get a business card.
Before we even start, this is why TaylorMade and this partnership is next level and why TaylorMade is the greatest company on the planet Earth when it comes to golf. Because I was talking to another person in a competitive on a competitive podcast that was like, how the hell do you guys
I thought you were saying another equipment company. I'm not booing another podcast.
They're sponsored by another equipment company. Okay, and they're like, must be nice to work with like a brand that actually gets it. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are actually doing stuff like this, and we get to do the media day stuff. Like, you guys are actually aligned with our thinking and where golf should go.
You mean a bit futuristic as opposed to historic?
100%.
Nice line.
You know, people like listening right now, wherever they are, they're in their cubes, and I'm not going to go about the Johns and the Roberts that are listening to this. The Robs are sitting. My buddy Rob hasn't smiled at work in 13 years. He literally says he doesn't laugh at work. He just punches in numbers and then goes home and becomes a crazy person.
It's like Hunger Games.
But this is what they want to hear. They want to hear what you're about to tell us. Like, what's actually going on out here? What, like, the human aspect. Why is Rory changing something? And why is Tiger putting in one club and not another club? It's really cool to hear. It's not just like X's and O's and numbers on a screen. So it's really cool.
Let's narrow it down a little bit. It is very cool. Tiger Woods, we'll start with him. He's the biggest story in the world of golf. Our buddy, my brother. You know, I saw yesterday on the internet that he is not going with a 5-wood. He's going with a 2-iron. What's the backstory with that? How involved are you in that?
I mean, I would say I'm involved in the background. He's got his key guys around him. You know, they'll brainstorm ideas. And, you know, when he played a while, when the majors were here before, he hit a lot of long irons. It seems like, although they've changed the golf course, you know, for him, he still sees the course with the same kind of, you know, strategy. If so be it.
Even though it's changed.
Yeah, I think the shaping of the holes and stuff. He still sees. You know, you're looking at, you know, the best iron player ever to hit the planet, right?
Yep.
So, and this is a second shot golf course where you've got to hit, you know, irons which are so precise.
So you need to be in the fairway to do that.
Yeah, fairway off the tee, but it's really a second shot golf course, right? So for him, you know, he's so good at that second shot, and if he can get himself into position to execute that, I think, and I think the big story is the fact that it's a 2-iron and a 3-iron that's gone into his bag. I mean, you're looking at taking out a 5-wood. He's probably the best 5-wood player in the world as well, because he sees so many different shots, and a 5-wood is a piece of equipment that requires you to cover a huge gap in your bag. You know, think of how long these guys are, right? So if you hit... If you hit your driver 320 and you hit your 3-wood 280,
right, that's very, you know, relatable, definitely.
and then you look at your longest iron. If your longest iron's a 4-iron or a 3-iron, that's only going 230. So you've got from 280 to 230 to cover. So how you're covering 50, 60 yards with one club? It's a 5-wood. You can hit them low, you can hit them high, you can fill that gap. So, you know, to take that out, he must see the course in a very, very specific way. And obviously have the ability to cover that gap with those clubs as well.
Right. So when he does, you know, and I think Colin similar, he took a wood out this week and put a long iron in.
A lot of guys, man.
Why are they doing that? Why is the, you know, why? Because to most players and or most fans, whatever, my thinking is like the 5-wood would come in higher. A hybrid comes in higher and softer. The greens are obviously, you know, going to be pretty firm. And so I'm wondering, why are they basically deciding for something that generally comes in a little lower and more piercing? They're trying to chase something out there.
Yeah, you can chase it off the tee, but there's also going to be 20 to 30 mile an hour winds all week. So when you're looking at predicting the weather as well,
gotcha.
I mean, you're trying to keep it under these trees, this big trees around you. So you know, try and keep it under the wind, get it. I mean, it's fairly firm. It's fairly firm, but it's also the greens are not fast. Mm-hmm. You know, so you, in terms of stopping the ball on the greens, I feel like because the winds are so high and the greens are so severe, you know, you're going to be able to stop the ball on the greens. It's not concrete. So your advantage, is getting into play, getting into position, and then using your kind of mid irons and short irons. I mean, the par threes are, again, right, the par threes are mega. Have you seen them out there?
It's like 240, 250.
They're crazy. I mean,
tiny greens.
That guy that just walked past there, you see that Nicolai Højgaard?
Yep.
I mean, that's an absolute stud.
Okay.
An absolute stud. 20 years old. He's won three times already. He should still be in college.
TaylorMade athlete yet?
TaylorMade, yeah. He's the future, bud.
I'd like to
see
that.
Nicolai Højgaard. TaylorMade won't miss a player like that.
He's an absolute stud. What a line that is.
This is, if you kind of, in terms of like the future. You know, he's, you know, you should go and watch him. It pulls
amazing. We're in the future, not historic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And he's, he said to me the other day, he was like, I actually hit a wood into a par three. It's never, oh, I mean, this gosh. Guy's 195 ball speed. I mean, he's never hit more than a freaking six iron.
Like, what into a par, what into a par three?
Yeah,
that's,
no,
my
guy. I think
yeah,
was, I'm not sure which hole it was, but
speaking
it's
my
like,
language,
he's down. Encroaching on my territory with that type of move. But that's really interesting that he would do that.
Yeah, so he's got like a 7-wood in his bag, and he's even said, like, we're now on Wednesday, I picked the 7-wood out, and I said, how's this thing going? He says, I haven't hit it once. In other words, what he's saying is that the course is not asking him to hit this club, right? He keeps hitting a 3-iron, or he keeps hitting something that suits his iron. So I don't think you dictate what you want to play. The course will kind of dictate to you what you need to do. And there's going to be, you know, a thing with like compared to the Masters, right? We chatted around the Masters. This is a new golf course, right? This is
right.
A new redesigned golf course. So nobody's played this thing.
Right.
So they're trying to work it out, right?
It's interesting because I was listening to DJ's interview this morning, and he was talking about his 3-wood and how around here he's actually going to need to hit 3-wood off the tee. And he was like, I never hit 3-wood off the tee. He's like, I either
yeah,
a driver,
he's
I hit
a driver
3-iron.
Guy, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, I literally have lived my whole career never hitting 3-wood off the tee.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden I'm going to need it a lot.
Yeah, so getting it in play is key, right? So there's no first cut.
Right.
It's fairway, and the fairways are fairly generous, and it's rough. And the rough is interesting enough that you feel like you can do something out of it.
Right, because we were walking. We walked in every day, and you kind of look at it, you're like, it's not that
maybe.
Bad.
And
but it's sound. But then you talk to Max, and he was kind of like, it's tough.
Yeah, if you get greedy, you take the, you know, the club that you kind of 50-50 on. You get a flyer or something like that, it's going to be a tough up and down. I think like in talking to like my boss and all like coaches and that type of thing, pitching and chipping will win this tournament. Pitching and chipping, getting up and down, turning three shots into two, and they've allowed that. They've given the players the opportunity with all these runoffs, and you know, you get guys who can chip out of tough lies. And then you get guys who are very good chippers out of perfect lies, you know. And I think that guy,
right?
You know, that guy is going to be—he's going to get up and down a lot.
We're talking about Tiger Woods, right? Is that who we're talking about right now?
Well, we're always talking about Tiger Woods.
He's
number one, number two, yeah. And number three on the list of importance.
I mean, we watched him on 16.
Oh my gosh,
he was around that green for 35, 40.
Every single ball was just in the hole. Or within a 5-foot radius.
Like Scotty Scheffler's short game. Oh. You know, from, I mean, he must be,
he must be
working his chops around. Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, he can hit every trajectory. He's very comfortable hitting irons off the tees and good iron player. They all play in like Tiger's irons, aren't they? All these guys, isn't that?
What about Tiger's wedges? What's the difference between that and someone else's wedges? Like, what is he doing differently?
So it's MG3 wedges,
okay.
which is a line that we, you know, we would have a raw face. So it's everything that we kind of put into our equipment that we would then sell to the consumer. The difference with Tiger's wedges is that he's had all the input on his grinds. So when you look at and we do sell that part, the Tiger Woods grind, which is a product that we. But he's designed the whole thing. The thing about that is that we're not putting the wedges on grinding wheels. They're milled grind. So they're on machines which are zero tolerance. So what would happen in the olden days, and Tiger, you know, he'd tell you about this, you know, that make him six wedges he'd take because they'd have to grind them on a wheel, get the bounce right, get the leading edge right, get the ski right. And once he gets them, then he goes in and tests them, and he'd throw that wedge away, and he'd hit the next one, and he'd be like, no, he'd move into
and
the
you sell it on eBay for $10,000.
No, this was before he was with Taylor.
Okay. Yeah, nice, touche.
But now, because you've got the technology to kind of laser sketch his perfect grind, once he's happy with it, you take the wedge that you've made for him, and you kind of pad it, and you scan it, and And the boys in R&D at TaylorMade are just phenomenal, and they'll create six or seven wedges for him, of which six or seven will be perfect.
As long as
they're built right.
Gosh, yeah, the Tiger's that dialed into, like, he knows his sketch. Like
dialed, man.
Like, he's probably sitting down at a computer with someone being like, no, I want this before we, like, laser it on. He's involved in that?
He's the artist of his own wedge? He gets the service,
what
right?
What the hell is happening around here?
He gets the service.
By the way, we get that service, too.
Yeah.
We're on the same level.
Yeah.
We just don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, number one in custom.
They told you to, like, sketch your milling. What would you, like?
I'd say take exactly what Tiger Woods does and give that to me.
That'd be like one of those tests where they're like, all right, draw a tree. And if you, like, put it with no leaves on it, it means that you're like a lunatic, depressed person. Yeah. Like, to me, I'd, like, draw, like, all these lines, and they'd be like, you're never going to hit wedges ever again.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So around here, since it's tight, it's Bermuda. Yeah. Are players using different bounces than normal, different wedges than normal?
I think they're sticking with what they're comfortable with because the bunkers are quite gritty, right? So that's something that they got to get used to. And then the fairways and the runoffs and the chipping areas, like, I was speaking to a player yesterday, and he said he played Monday and he was, like, really comfortable around the greens.
Okay.
And then Tuesday, he felt like, because it had rained overnight, the ball was just sitting down that little bit more, and he felt uncomfortable. And he was like, so, like, when he plays in the morning, when he plays in the afternoon, he feels like he's got to account for that, just because of what, you know, the way the ball's, like, the condition's so good that you're going to get consistency in the lie, but it is different depending on, you know, when he plays.
Right.
I mean, that's you talk about attention to detail, right? I was like,
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, that stuff is fascinating.
You obviously not hindered as good today as you were yesterday.
Clearly.
How often do these guys change out their wedges?
I think they're all individual in the way they do that. I mean, there was a time where we would give Rory a new wedge every couple of weeks, just literally. And, you know, he's a high spin player. He does, you know, I remember... You have somebody like Scotty who will play a wedge until it's absolutely dead, and then so it's everyone's different. There's other players that give you back the worn wedges, and they ask you to re-groove them, and fix it, almost like refurbish, because they're holding onto the wedge because
they like the
exactly. It's just like the one wedge guy.
Right.
Since the greens this week are a little slower, everybody's talking about that. There's so much undulation that they just kind of have to be a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. Anybody change anything with putters to make them more hot or anything like that to make up for it?
No, I think that...
Because some of them do that for the British Open, right?
Yeah, they do. But that's really slow, right? Yeah, the British. Yeah. This is that they're just trying to make sure the greens are playable in all conditions. Give it the wind or... I mean, we were on 18. I was with Fleetwood on 18. He's over there. And the pin was kind of front left, and all of us in the group, it was like three players, we all went to like the middle back of the green, and it was literally who could hold the green. Let's see who can hold the green just with a putt. And no, the ball wouldn't hold the green. So, and this is, looking at these greens, I reckon there must be like maybe 10 and a half, whereas most tour courses are... you can get up to 12 and a half, 13. Right. Yep. So there is a lot of slope. There's a lot, and you have to account for that. But staying under the hole is going to be key. Staying under the hole, I think chipping is everything this week. Getting off the tee, getting into position. I mean, Rory McIlroy, man. Rory. I am so, so happy.
Oh, man. So we're hearing this. We're on, this is Wednesday. I feel real good about Rory McIlroy.
I mean, that look you just gave was...
Yeah, you were excited.
But why wouldn't he be... he's Rory McIlroy.
Rory's got this this course. It's between Augusta and Savannah. It's called the Hoopy. Hoopy Match Club. Same designer that did...
Yeah, Gil Hands, right?
Gil Hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise you, man, I'm walking around there, and then I've been to a Hoopy, and Rory, amazing place. And I'm just feeling a Hoopy, yeah, man.
Wow, okay.
He tears that place up.
Oh, man.
He
just loves it there.
He's the...
He had a little...
It's his happy place. Wow. It was my happy place. Insane. It was unbelievable, man. But I just, like, you look at how the tee boxes, like, fall into the fairways. And,
yeah.
you know, everything's kind of one piece, and you go to his place and he must feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Do you guys know what the world's most powerful personalized digital fitness and health coach and official fitness wearable, the PGA Tour and LPGA Tours, is?
I know what it is because it's on my wrist right now.
What's that, Trent?
It's a Whoop.
That color looks cool, like it's reminiscent and gave a little flair around a big tournament.
Augusta big tournament, green, maybe.
Yeah, you got a different color than we do.
Pine green.
Black, pine green. I've got the black. Black, I like your the 4.0. It does your blood oxygen level. It tracks your sleep. The charger is faster than I remember it the is, other one being. Whoop 4.0 is incredible. If you're not on the Whoop at this point, I mean, you're either just ignoring all of these reads, you're ignoring every single video we're in that we're wearing them.
You're ignoring your health.
You're ignoring your health. It's a must-have.
It says right here, Whoop 4.0 is smaller, smarter, and designed with new biometric tracking, including skin temperature, blood oxygen, and a new haptic alarm. You go to whoop.com, enter the code 4, you save 15% at checkout.
What's the haptic alarm do?
I actually haven't used that. And when he said that, I guess if you set the alarm, haptic means it like shakes your wrist.
To wake you up? Vibrates. Instead of being like the annoying iPhone alarm?
So to wake you up, or maybe even to like get you active or something?
I think it's to wake you up, because at the end
what does haptic mean?
It's like vibration.
Okay.
Is that right?
It's like it...
How confident are you? Give me a percentage.
85.
Okay.
But every night, right before I go to bed, the bar that usually is the health monitor down there, it says set alarm, and I don't do it because I thought it was just going to be like... Rah, rah, rah. It'll say it down there.
Today. Is that what you're a little tired?
It'll be...
I'm at 50-something because we had a couple cocktails last night. Full disclosure.
That's interesting. I might start using that haptic alarm.
My blood oxygen right now, 97%. Thank you, Whoop. Resting heart rate, 54. It'd be nice if it was a little lower, but that's pretty good. 54.
Haptic is relating to the sense of touch, in particular relating to the perception and manipulation of objects using the senses of touch.
Wow. That's pretty accurate.
Kind of, yeah.
Whoop.com. Use the code 4. You get 15% off at checkout. The Whoop 4.0. Save 15% off. Whoop.com. Code 4. So how much does Rory loving the stealth?
Yeah. Too much.
No, I feel like he's just been.
No, I think he's
confident with
I think he's in as good a place as I've ever seen him when it comes to driving the ball, and you know, feeling like he can do anything in terms of his natural shot shaping with the driver. I'm loving it. I don't know what you guys are, but I mean, we've got. Talk about the fairways and the drivers. There's a lot in play this week, man. A hell of a lot. A lot of those red faces. I mean, we've probably got 13 staff players in the field. It's not a lot. So staff players, guys, contracts, the guys that you pay. I mean, depending on how the 5-wood long iron situation goes, we could have up to 100 stealth
fairways
in play. Yeah.
No.
So it's
wow.
This is what people then don't notice, but when you're looking at a product and you're looking at a credibility and a validation of the performance of a product, that for me,
the free agents that are using.
I mean, the free agents, but majority of this field would be contracted, so they're not all free agents. Some of them are just choosing to play. You know, maybe they've got a 10-club deal or 11-club
right,
deal.
Right, right. And they find the stealth is the best chance they have to win.
The freedom that they have, they're going that way.
Right.
Which is cool.
Dude, when we were at the Zerk, we were like, oh, I didn't know that guy had a stealth. I didn't know that guy had a stealth.
It was staggering.
Every tee box we got, we're like, everybody's got a stealth.
At the Phoenix Open, Kevin Chappell was rocking it. Pat Perez was rocking it. Not contracted at all. And they just were all like, I mean, I love this thing.
Also happy to test. And there's a – I mean, we pride ourselves on at least – and at least 50% of everything that's free out there should be tailor-made. So half. You know, there's a lot of brands, there's, you know, 6, 7, 8 brands or whatever that compete for that space. And if we can have half of it, it's
pretty good.
You know, it's pretty measurable. So
pretty measurable, I'd say. I'm obsessed with the P770s. And I know, I believe Tiger, the 3 and the 2 iron are P770s this week.
Yeah.
Does it concern you that he and I are using the same irons?
And me. I'm using
and you?
And me, yeah. So, I mean, it's what's cool is like in true Tiger style, you know, he's got a steel shaft in there. It's in that X100 mid, which has worked out amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's really, you know, it's something that he's played and felt for a long time. So he must have immediately gone, that's exciting. And then you look at the head, right? What is he looking for? He's looking for a little bit of height. He's looking for a little bit of ball speed. and then the ability to hit the Tiger Woods golf shots, which is the stinger and the high draws. And you watch him on the range yesterday. I mean, what an intense range session that was. I don't think I saw two shots in a row where the tee height was the same or anything. Everything was like versatility, right? And the ball flight was just moving in every window. Were you guys, I don't know if you guys were at the at the shoot where they did the, where they had all the glass windows. Did you ever see that video?
We've seen it on video, but we were not there.
So watching, that was like watching Tiger yesterday on the range was like watching him on that day.
Oh God.
And like, I'm literally standing behind him, right? And we've got, you know, you've got DJ, you've got Tommy, you've got Matt Wolf, you've got Colin. All of our, I mean, it must have been about 8 of our guys on the range there. And he was an assassin. He picked a player, and there was like 9 windows for that player's face, and he just picked him off one at a time. And at the end, it was him and Matt Wolf, I think. I don't know, whoever it was, but the guy that he was playing against was right on the other end. So his face was like yeah, like down there. And he just like looked there and just literally 9 windows, right? Every shot. And I feel like with that 770, he's loving it. And it's not like he's got it this week, right? I mean, he was, you know, we had information and we had feedback weeks ago that when he was loving this, that he was, yeah, that he was playing it and was loving it. And that spec, I mean, obviously we sent him a lot of options, and that was where he settled. But I'm thinking the fact that it's a 2 and a 3 is impressive.
When you guys get that feedback and that information, do they send you the actual data, or is it more just they're sending you their thoughts?
So depending on who it is, right? So Tiger's not going to send data. He's just going to tell you what he's feeling and what he's thinking. And Rob, you know, Rob, who's Tiger's right-hand man. I mean,
our guy.
He is literally the best human being in the world, isn't he?
He's perfect. He's a perfect man.
Yeah. So for him, and whether it's a driver, a 3-wood, whatever it is, when Rob comes to you with feedback and he's very clued up with equipment, he'll talk like Tiger Woods talking through Rob.
Proxy.
I like this. You know, I remember with the driver. I mean, that was what we sent end of last year. We sent the stealth driver to Tiger Woods before that father son event. The driver wasn't even on the list yet, right? We were still waiting to push it out, and the feedback was, this is go time.
Were you
this is going in.
Were you when he in. Showed up with it at the PNC, did you know that he was going
yes,
to?
Okay. Absolutely, yeah.
So you didn't turn on TV like, oh, he's using
No. That was everybody else. launch,
yeah,
launch.
Yeah, right.
Hit the button. Hit the button. Go, go.
Turn those machines on.
Minions are all running around.
What is this?
We credit card processor.
We need double.
Yeah, right.
Unbelievable. Yeah, so I've told this story on the podcast, I think, before, but
I couldn't keep it.
Oh, the enemy.
I got so excited. I don't know. I don't know what was happening.
He can't contain himself.
I didn't see nothing. He came downstairs.
What was he going to do, pants you?
I don't know.
We'll never know.
So Kevin Kisner was coming up behind me.
Dewey's barely making it down the stairs right now.
Oh, tell me that. He gave us Snickers bars yesterday.
Yeah, we're not dogging him.
Fucking love that guy.
Out of the way, Dwayne.
There you go, Dwayne. I'm coming, he says.
I love you.
I'm coming.
Tough major. This
you really gave that away.
Oh, but
I know.
So easy. I saw kids just like gave me, you know. Shh. I was just
he
like,
didn't give me the.
Was he gonna tabletop me? You guys remember doing that?
That was when people tabletop people. It's super mean.
Speaking of TaylorMade athletes, Tommy Fleet was wearing an outrageous outfit today. He's got the green, the blue.
He can pull it off though.
Adrian, what do you think of that outfit?
I think he pulls off anything.
He does.
He's really got that cool factor,
he's cool,
doesn't he?
So now, Adrian, a guy like Tommy, he's got all the steel in the world. Obviously, I mean, you wouldn't call it like a. Whatever you want to call where his game's at right now. Yeah. Is he the type of guy that's like constantly coming to the truck and trying to figure out why things are happening and how he can change things up? Like, are you working more with a guy like him than you are a guy like Scotty, who's like just got things rolling right now?
Sure. I mean, he's playing well. He's trending well. And if you look at, he's probably more settled now than he's been in the last 12 months, which is great. I would say that he's more of like a deep thinker. He kind of analyzes a little bit more than most guys. And very patient. So you know, the fact that he's trending, like when I say trending, I mean statistically, he's playing like a top 20 player in the world now.
Right.
which is great, which means, you know what I mean, a good week on the greens, or a, you know, just a little bit of fortune going his way, and he's gonna be in the mix and have a chance.
Right.
He plays hard golf courses very well because his iron play so good. And when you talk about like
Shinnecock, baby,
you talk about a second shot golf course and you know, an iron player that is, you know, it was so great. We were talking about Tiger so much, and you know, like he actually hit Tiger's irons before Tiger.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A few years back, he was obviously deep. He was in Nike irons, and he was deeply searching for a fresh set. The irons were kind of so worn, and he kind of gave us all a shot at finding him some irons.
It's amazing.
And Tiger's iron wasn't fully cooked yet. You know what I mean? Look, Tiger was still designing it, but
cooked as a better.
But you know what I mean?
Still in the kitchen.
You got a player like that, and you've got one crack at him, and you've got a sweet store of equipment, but you can only take him one or two options. So being smart, we took him that one.
Yeah.
Because it was his DNA, right? Oh, mate, it was amazing. It was amazing. Nobody had a chance. Nobody had a chance.
Is it nerve-wracking when you make a club for someone and then they're on the range hitting it and they're just directly judging it, basically?
Yeah, straight away. And then if it's a bigger player, you got people around and crowds around.
Right.
We try to do a lot of work off-site.
Yep.
with the big guys. But then you got guys preparing for tournaments. So there's a lot that goes on-site.
I always think of the scene in Star Wars where they're standing there with Darth Vader and they're like, don't worry, they're chasing the Millennium Falcon. And they're like, don't worry, we disabled the hyperspeed. He's like, no problem. The thing just takes off in hyperspeed. Darth Vader just like looks at him like... What the fuck was that?
Yeah.
I feel like that on the range of like they hit it doesn't come off a certain way and they're just kind of like they're like looking to you basically.
Yeah you do get it.
It's gotta be weird.
So you always like try to take a couple of options.
Yeah
you know, most of the time, you know, you have, you can predict what's gonna happen, but your plan B needs to be pretty ready because you're not gonna have much time. If let's say he hits it, the ball flight's perfect, but there's like a feel thing or a sound thing or that the player's uncomfortable with, you've got to make sure that you have an answer for the next.
And they know their numbers and their feels so well. I mean, he's not a tailor-made athlete, but Kevin Kisner, were behind him. Yeah, he almost pants rigs. But he was...
You blew it.
I did blow it. He was hitting like a bunch of drivers yesterday on the range, and they were giving him maybe three or four different driver heads. And I'm like, imagine having such a dialed in swing that every single swing is so consistent that your manufacturer and your team can figure out the difference between lofts and degrees and shafts. Like for us, we got fitted. We went to the TaylorMade Kingdom. It's amazing. It definitely helped us in our game.
Yeah.
But like swing one to swing 15 can't be the same for me as it is for Kevin Kisner or Scotty Scheffler.
Well, you say that, but we would call it like a fingerprint. So although you might not be as consistent in terms of delivering the club face in a really tight tolerance way, your DNA, your swing fingerprint will be, and we've proven that.
You have proven
we've
it.
We've proven that.
Yeah. I didn't know the science behind it, but
that's the math system. Yeah. So you,
wow.
Whoever you are, you will repeat to like a certain degree, which is very high percentage. You know, you're going through lessons and you kind of start trying to shift and change what you're doing, but if you just, I just got you there and I told you to hit, if I told you to hit me 10 shots, right? We took all the data and we put it on an avatar, like a mat system, motion capture gear system, and we put those 10 swings over each other, like we morphed them together, you'd be amazed at how consistent they were.
Wow.
That's really interesting.
So every golfer,
that's good to know,
every golfer, regardless of skill, has a fingerprint where it's like,
which
a general swing.
100%.
Regardless of how many
swings.
Wow.
You can fit it.
Wow.
How many do you need to like get a confident fingerprint, basically? How many swings?
Well, probably one.
One?
Jesus. No, what I'm saying is like I know the next one's going to be similar, but then, you know, if you've got 10, 15, 20, 7 irons, and then we started to analyze where you kind of break it down right now. Now we're looking at, let's just look at club face, and your club face could range from, let's say, 2 or 3 degrees left to 2 or 3 degrees right. That's a 6 degree gap. It's huge. But whereas Tommy's might be 1 to 1.5 degrees right. in the right direction. So his consistency is really there. So our job with the consumer or fitting you would be to try and get that tolerance better through equipment, through forgiveness, through, you know, we can look at patterns at where you hit it on the face.
Next year, we got to do the morph thing. We never did the morph.
Oh, we got to do the morph
gear
thing.
System, man.
Oh, we want to do the gear system, okay?
Gear system.
Looking at Mike in the background. Writing it down. We want to do
that's
the
gear a fake thing. File that you're writing that down. Thing. There's no way.
He's sending a Snapchat or something.
That is, there's no way that you wrote anything down there.
I quickly want to give a shout out to Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah,
we're talking about him. He's going down this whole line.
I'm bad at estimating numbers. He signed 150 autographs.
He's the only guy I've seen do the entire
wow,
line.
They've got all right, Frankie's head covered. Gears.
So shout out to Tommy Fleetwood. He's just that's class act right there.
They've got all right, Frankie gear over there, Tom, and he might think it's for his.
Come over here.
He might think it's for his son. His son's name is Frankie.
He's like, no, I'm finishing this line. Which I
come on, Scotty.
Holy, there you go, Scotty. Way to go, kid.
Howdy, boy, Teddy.
Man, Scotty Scheffler's locked in. It's Wednesday before
he's
major.
Ready to go, man.
Guy is ready to go. Number one player in the world. Coming off a Masters win. Jeez, that guy's good.
Going to the range at 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon.
Have you ever seen down? And I'm sure the answer is obviously yes. I mean, Tiger Woods exists. But have you ever seen a guy work as hard as that guy? Because when we were at the Ryder Cup, he putted for
3 hours?
3 hours after a practice round.
Tuesday night? Wednesday
because
night?
He figured out that one of his putters were a little bit off or whatever. He refused to stop working until he figured out the putt. I mean, that guy is built different. Yeah. Even in an environment where everyone's built different, he's built even more different.
American superstar, man.
It's true.
American superstar.
How thrilled are you guys with him?
Oh, man. And we had put in so much work with him to get his trust and acquire him to TaylorMade.
Yep.
And, you know, we had things locked up with him way before he won in Phoenix. And like, the thing was, like, everybody would say, like, oh, wow, what timing was that? You signed him, and then he went on and won 3 or 4 times. But in reality, you know, we had – the work was done. And
you guys knew.
We were just crossing the T's and dotting the I's. And, you know, here he comes. See, what a man.
Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah, more autographs.
Yeah, giving us a lot of good information.
Hey, you think anybody else in this group could pull off that outfit you got on right now?
I can't even pull it off.
Oh, yeah, you can. No, we just had a full discussion about you can. Good, yeah.
Looking at my ass.
I am.
Autographs, all we could see.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Well, the only reason we could see that is because you did this whole autograph line. We were giving you a shout-out.
Actually, do you know what? Funnily enough, my caddy was just speaking, and he said that Trent is really shit at golf.
What?
Did you?
What's happening?
It's not untrue.
They,
said Trent's crap at golf.
So they don't believe me.
He's seen some really bad golf shots. That's true. Tillery.
They don't believe me that you hit
he's got his hands
before
full.
He did.
I just set a Tiger's hands before he did, yeah.
Probably not enough.
Really?
Yeah.
He did, yeah, at Riviera 1 year. He said, how did you, like, he looked in my bag and he was like, how did you get those?
No,
we were playing. Yeah. You know that Japan tournament that Tiger won.
Yeah,
Zozo. So Tiger comes off the course. He's played with you that week, and he's just played unbelievable. He's come off and done a clinic for a whole crowd of people, the best clinic I've ever seen. And one reporter asks him about his irons and, you know, how he, you know, talk us through it. And the first thing he says is, Tommy Fleetwood actually had a set before me. I didn't even know you.
If it's all I achieve in my golf career, then it's going
that's
well,
good.
Right? It's good.
It's amazing.
Perfect, man. All thanks, buddy. Right. Thanks. Have a good week.
Good to see you, Tommy. Best of luck this week, Tommy. I'll be watching for the
next 3 hours while
you're ass looks nice.
Yeah. Tommy Fleetwood, most interesting man in golf.
He's amazing. What a human being, man.
He's so great.
He's just cool. He's got a level of cool, I feel like, that not many people carry.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to stay up tonight thinking about his caddy stuff for sure.
He uses cool.
It's what I say. Without trying. Yeah. So he's not trying to.
What I say.
He think he's
cool. Slide everywhere, wouldn't he?
How about his caddy? What's his boy's
Ian
name?
Ian Finnis.
Yeah, he buried Trent.
Finnis. He goes, you suck at golf. Finnis. And he goes, it's what I see. It's just like, okay.
It's over. It's over. I know I'm not. I know. I did a Breaking 100 series. We're going to Breaking 90.
We never claimed to be good.
Never.
But now you look at, like, what a duo, right? You got Finau and Tommy and best mates, and they grew up. I mean, how do
awesome.
How do you
where those two end up getting matched up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wow. You meet.
Yeah, it's amazing. No, his caddy is comments on a lot of our stuff, actually.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, he's one of the trolls.
No. Well, golf.
It might come off the wrong way because they got
both of them really
from across the pond.
It's a different sense of humor. It's a dry sense of humor that we love.
He's as honest as they come, straight up, and that's probably how they both absolute golf nerds, nuts. Everything. So that's why they're probably best friends.
We were at the
Zurich
Classic, and we would go up to Tommy right before we played in this like that shootout thing that we were doing, where we were hitting on the range. And we go up to Tommy, and we're like, we're nervous as shit. And he goes, go to someone else with your problems.
It's like, I can't help you.
It came off so funny. But like to other people, I mean, like some people might think like, oh, that was super rude. But we're dying laughing because you know his humor. He's such dry humor. Yeah. God, he's the best guy ever. Well, yeah.
Super sharp.
So witty.
Awesome. We've noticed that one of our biggest takeaways being, you know, now more involved and around is how you would think that a lot of the players, caddies, et cetera, would be sick of talking about golf. For the most part, all they want to do is talk about golf. They think about golf all day. They're golf nerds. You know, Harry Higgs is another TaylorMade athlete. You know, we had him on the podcast during the media week when we were out in Florida. And, you know, we had him on for like an hour and 45 minutes. And Harry Higgs obviously has the image, the brand. He's got no buttons. He's taking his shirt off. But, man, we got into like for an hour and 15 minutes of it. It was hardcore golf down to the science. And he loved it.
Or like I think a lot of people on site, a lot of their like personnel, equipment guys on site, players, you have to. It's a lifestyle, right? Think of like, you know, call it a soccer player or a football player. They go they train. The time spent doing it is a lot less than a golfer who turns up on a Monday, finishes on a Sunday, turns up on a Monday,
right?
Finishes on a Sunday, turns up on a Monday.
It's nonstop.
So as a passion. I mean, we love it. I mean, I go, like, my boss and my colleagues, my team in Europe, if we go to dinner, we eat all day. We go to dinner in the evening. Maybe we got a player or some agents. What are we talking about? Golf. and it's like you never run out of things to talk about because every day is so different and everyone's trying something unique and new.
It's just an addiction. Golf's an addiction.
I mean, last night we had an event under the lights across the street at La Fortune. We had a Tulsa Tango. And Max Homa just showed up, and I'm thinking to myself, like,
his caddy played.
Mm-hmm. His caddy played. I'm like, man, aren't these guys golfed out? This guy's got a major this week, and he's just like sitting there in just like shorts and t-shirt, just holding the wedge and just like watching golf. He's cool. Like, what else am I gonna do? I'm just sitting in my hotel.
Time,
like, I don't know. I love this thing.
Way to pass time.
So it's,
and they're pretty good at it. That's
so pretty good. I mean, we got a lesson out of him last night.
Next level. How good they are. You got a little lesson out of Max?
Bunker lesson.
So we were deciding it was a scramble, and Trent and I had missed a green for like the first time. We were actually striping the ball, but Trent put one in a bunker.
Whispers around property how good you guys are hitting it.
Probably the bet going into a par three course, you would think that Trent and I would be the worst combo of all time because wedges and everything. Yeah. We were 2 under through 11 holes. It was like we were playing well. It was like,
I have the stealth irons. Going low.
Stealth irons in the back. He's loving them.
I love them.
Shit out of them.
I've never hit the ball better.
Anyway, he was in one bunker. I was on the other side of the green, and some like it was a short sided pin, so it was kind of a tough chip. I was like, we should go for the chip because Trent's the worst bunker player on the planet. No offense to John Tillery or you, but and then Max is like, "What are you crazy? You have like a perfect lie in this bunker, and you have all this room to run it out." So we choose the bunker at La Fortune Golf Club. They're all like. Hard pan bunker, just not this fluffy stuff out here. And I was like nervous about it going in. He didn't help me on the shot, but he was going to give me a lesson after, basically said. So I thought, with such a hard pan, almost like hitting off concrete, I thought you almost attack it like a wedge shot off of like a tight lie where you just nip it underneath. Because I'm thinking to myself, like, I can't go down because it's just hard. And after we both sculled it 150 feet off over the green, legitimately 150 feet over the green,
as it was.
He got into the bunker and he's just like, no, dude, you're completely wrong.
Opposite.
On that.
What a game of opposites.
It's a game of opposite. He goes, everything you have on your front foot and as hard as you can, you're driving into the ground.
Get the leading edge.
You have to get the leading edge because if you think about it like hitting off concrete,
it's
going to bounce and hit the center equator of the golf ball and you're going to go flying out that way.
It's called a knock.
That's it. There you go. Exactly.
Sure is.
So it couldn't have been more of a bet.
I just needed
to
hear that, actually, because my least favorite shot in golf is when you get into a bunker, especially a lot of public courses we play where they're not perfect conditions.
Yeah.
Fine. But when it is hard pan, I have no option other than just blade it 100 yards over.
So
I don't have another shot.
I asked him, I'm like, when are you ever in this situation? He's like, dude, you'd be surprised. He goes, even at Southern Hills, it's a little bit firmer than we're used to. Yeah. He said, these bunkers.
I guess that's why you got to move your feet.
Which I didn't know they did that to test the surface.
There you go. You know how deep it is?
Yes.
You know how much bounce you need to use.
Frankie goes, what are you, Aladdin? Whenever the people say
yeah, that. Yeah, the Pocahontas, one with the earth and the wind.
I just do it because everybody else does it.
I do it because I thought you knew
this looks good.
Oh, yeah.
Just so they have something to rake when they're out of it. You know what I mean?
They come over, you went through the bot. It's just like, what are
my
you?
Knees.
Yeah, is this good? It's good, you know. It's deep.
Do I look like I know what I'm doing?
You're holding Trent's it at quicksand. Like you're holding it at the hosel. Just now, Trent, you're in there, pal.
But yeah, I thought that was a pretty cool little lesson. I never thought of it that way.
These guys are insanely good.
It's a glaring look into how much they know about the game compared to us. The complete opposite approach.
Well, Adrian, look, we appreciate it. We took a ton of your time. Tommy said, I think you've been over there for 3 hours with those guys. You're a golf nut.
Is he saying you're a little bit
nuts.
Of a diva? Is that why?
No. He just needs my attention. You know what I mean? He's like, why is somebody else getting his attention?
Right. Jealous.
Yeah, he's not going to be fitting them. That's what he's thinking. Yeah.
He's an attention seeker over there. That's right.
He wants a dollar in his degrees right now.
We appreciate it. Big week for the TaylorMade athletes. We got the number one ranked player in the world. We have The Needle, the biggest name in the history of golf, TaylorMade athlete. We got Rory, who you were giggling about. You're so confident in him.
Crazy. The vibes.
Tommy Fleetwood. We got awesome. A lot of hot action for our guys this week. So we appreciate the time. I imagine, you know, coming up the Open Championship, we'll probably have to go back to our major championship equipment consultant.
Absolutely, man. And I appreciate you guys having me on. And it's fun. It really is fun. The future.
Future.
Not historic.
Not historic. Your shoes are awesome, by the way, too. Those Nikes are sick.
I got a nice friend at Nike, man. I'll give him a shout out. He sends, these are special for this week. He calls me up Monday, says, you're going to get something Thursday in the post. Will you please wear them next week?
Like, those are amazing.
Anything that's free, I'll wear.
You got like kind of a clean swagger about
you. Of course.
It's not flashy, but it's if you really dig deep, you're like, okay.
Those are nice too.
This guy's putting some effort in.
Thank you,
man. Thanks for the time.
Cheers.
Right,
thank you, Adrian. Appreciate you.
Cheers.
Adrian is the man. TaylorMade Golf is the company. They are the best. And we're about to get now to From the Gallery, which there may be a bit going on, unintentional bit, where I say we have a bunch of From the Galleries to get to, and then we talk ourselves basically off cliffs and never get to it. We are actually going to get to a couple From the Galleries. And From the Gallery is actually brought to you by our friends at Truly Hard Seltzer, which it's summertime. It's hot. We've made that very clear. It's hot in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's going to be hot in Scottsdale, Arizona. Truly Hard Seltzer is one of the great refreshing drinks to enjoy on a golf course, at a pool, on a boat, at a bar, wherever you may be. You can visit trulyhardseltzer.com and find out where it is near you. Every can has under 110 calories, 1 gram of sugar, and naturally gluten-free, so no gluten, without gluten, sans gluten. And then they have over 30 flavors, so there's something for everyone. They got their new margarita flavors, which are awesome. Their fruit punch flavors, which I think is what Frankie was trying to get to last time.
No, there's a kiwi one I was telling you about. I got a lot of messages about it. There's a new kiwi. I don't know what their name is. I don't know if it's like the party mix or something. There's a name for them, but everyone's been sending it to me. There's a new kiwi flavor out there. It's wild. It's got a crazy little can with a kiwi splashing into some vodka.
Okay.
It's cool.
Okay. So go get yourself some Truly Hard Seltzer. They got over 30 flavors. So they got a little bit for everybody. Wild Berry is probably my favorite. OG, the Blueberry Acai. I believe that's my father, Steve. His favorite is the Blueberry Acai. We're going to be at Mesa Country Club in the Mesa, Arizona, which is right near Scottsdale and Phoenix, on Monday and Tuesday, drinking Truly Hard Seltzers. They're the official sponsor, title sponsor of the Barstool Classic. But do yourself a favor. Grab yourself a Truly. You're going to love it if you haven't tried them. I don't know what rock you've been living under, but congratulations for getting out from underneath it. And try yourself some Truly and find Truly Hard Seltzer near you at trulyhardseltzer.com. A couple of these From the Galleries really quickly. The first one
You guys seen the movie The Replacements?
Yeah.
Yep.
God, it's been so long though.
Keanu Reeves, yeah. Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
In that movie, a guy pukes on the ground and they move the huddle away from the puke.
Okay.
Could we do something similar out of the sun
you're
now?
In the sun.
I don't want to stand because it's already hot enough outside and I just didn't want to stand directly in the sun because we've got this beautiful shade under this tree.
Is this better, Trent?
I feel
Ryan?
Way better now. Right, so good. I appreciate you guys doing that. That was the only way I could bring it up. It's a great
Anything
movie.
Else you guys
it's
want
a good movie.
Real quick. No, it's a great movie.
I like that movie. Replacements.
Blake from Vancouver. What's up?
What was that?
Brendan Jones, what did you just say?
Blake Nakagawa. Yeah. Love Blake. 8-year-old Blake, who's probably 10 or 11 now.
What?
We gotta do a video of Blake. You know Blake, the little Hawaiian kid?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that him that did the thing?
No.
Oh, this guy's
this
from
Blake from Vancouver.
Hawaii, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, Blake Nakagawa, I believe his name is.
Kids can fucking stripe it.
Yeah, he's good. And the his sister's really good, too.
It's crazy.
The family doesn't mess around. Shout out to Blake. Love this.
Shout out to Blake.
Sorry for cursing. Earmuffs. Blake from Vancouver. Has Tiger ever listened to the pod?
Nope.
Nope.
I think nope as well.
Nope, but definitely has been told about some things that were said on it. You got to hear these guys, bunch of idiots.
I bet he's been shown a social clip from the pod.
100%.
Yeah.
Clips. Well,
yeah.
Dude, Robbie Mac knows every time we blade a fucking wedge. And it, like, whenever our, like, big videos go viral on a social on social media, he sees them.
Did we put the audio of you and him at the match into the podcast? Because he definitely heard that.
You think so?
Because he was there.
Yeah, but you're right. That audio he consumed in real time with me standing right next to him.
He's definitely been told about
it. No, that. Yeah, so but has he ever sat down and like on Spotify or iTunes or whatever and been like, Foreplay Pod? No.
Nope.
Never.
But none of them. Zero podcast.
The clips that go crazy for sure. Like that to me seems like something Robbie Mac like sort of feeds a little bit of information here and there to Tiger.
It has to go across Robbie Mac's desk before it gets to Tiger Woods' face.
That's right.
Agreed.
Eyes, ears.
There's no doubt.
Caleb, not Caleb Presley, I don't think. In your lifetime while driving, have you passed more cars or been passed by more cars on the road?
I've passed more cars. I'm a passer.
You're a fast driver? You're a thrill seeker?
No, not like that, but I can just picture it, and I'm very rarely like stagnant in the right lane. And I do the right thing where I pass on the left and I move back to the right. I'm not an asshole.
Me too.
But like I'm definitely always kind of on the move.
I'm going to say for me it's close.
Okay.
And the reason I'm not an aggressive driver, but I've done a lot of road trips, you know, and you know, you pass a lot on road trips. Not that many. I feel like because you're always pushing the envelope a little bit. You're like, if the speed limit's 65, you're right at like 72, mm-hmm. not quite at like 77 because that's 12 over. You might get a ticket. 77 or 8 over, you're not going to get a ticket. So I feel like you're kind of in that, but you're buzzing by people.
You know what has kind of changed 50, this 50. Too is GPS, where they'll put up true. The time of arrival on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
It'll say you're going to get there at 7:18 p.m.
It's a contest.
But like, oh, we can get there at 6:45.
It's a contest.
And I pass more people.
And you're not. Yeah, I agree. And you're not like.
But then where are the people that have been passed?
No, I pass way more people. There's a lot of instances I can think back to. Number one being Long Island Expressway going into the Queens Midtown Tunnel. There's a bunch of sheep that wait on the left three lanes and the right lanes for buses only. And every single morning that thing fucking piles up. And this will come back to haunt me at some point. I'm sure I can get a ticket just for talking about this. But, you know, you just so happen to like, oh, I missed the sign. And you just ride the right lane. You pass 10,000 cars every morning. It makes your commute from an hour and a half to 45 minutes. It's crazy.
I also.
And you're just, like, you always get into the left lane when you see, you get like over one lane when you see someone maybe texting and they didn't realize that everyone moved ahead of them. You sneak right in there. It's a fucking grind.
But you've never been the one texting that like a bunch of cars just flew by you on the left?
Yeah, dude, I've done that way too much and I'm a go. I couldn't have been I've never been in the instance where someone was beating me to that right lane move. I don't know that I've always been the guy to try and get in that move. I'm definitely past 20 times more people than I've been past.
20x, wow.
Dude, I'm
just wondering where all the people are then that are being passed all the time.
I think maybe it might come down to population and age. Do you age into the right lane? Like when you get older, you become less.
You definitely age into you don't give a fuck about anyone else on the road.
And that makes me think then you go into the right lane, you're just like, I'm gonna just cruise in the right lane.
Turn to a Q-tip and you just
we got young blood a little bit and we're still kinda like, let's go, let's pass, let's
so you think, Birch tried to pass one car in a two lane road, opposite directions, and it's like you're not supposed to pass cars there, and he tried to, and we almost got fucking decked by a truck.
He's an irresponsibly dangerous driver.
Yeah, he makes horrible decisions.
Really bad.
He is, man.
He doesn't focus the way you're supposed to focus. He thinks it's like a game, like you're playing a video game. What is it, top five cause of death in America?
It's got to be up there.
This is like automobile accidents?
I think I'm more past cars, but maybe that's what people...
What you're saying, and I think that I'm in that boat as well, but what you're saying is by the time, as you get closer to 85 years old, you're saying you think it starts to even out?
Yeah.
You start to get past more and more and it gets closer to zero.
Like right now, I still think like I got somewhere to be. I got to get there. I got to go there now. I think as you age and you get a little bit more perspective, it's like we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah.
So that's JJ Spawner over there, huh?
So JJ Spahn, I had a good incident with JJ Spahn today. I walked over and I saw him on the putting green with
stand over
Michigan
here.
Over here.
Yeah,
I saw him on the putting green with Joel Damon.
First of all, what tournament did he win?
He was the one right before the Masters.
A week or two before the Masters. Maybe the week before the Masters. Oh, it was at the it was in Texas, right?
Valero.
The Valero?
Yes.
Texas Open.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Can we confirm that in case he comes over here? So we just, wait, sounds so like we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. All right, JJ. Go get him, baby.
Let's go, JJ.
Come on, man. The miscommunication.
So he just flicked off Frankie Brilliant.
He fucking flicked me off.
No, he doesn't like you. He's not kidding.
Bro, it was a miscommunication. All right.
So here's what happened. Let me explain.
I gotta explain my side.
So I walk over. Valero Texas Open, he won that?
Yes.
JJ Spahn, great player. Awesome emotional victory. So the week before the Masters, he wins the Valero Texas Open to get into the field in the Masters. We're doing a podcast, and that's going to come up in a second. What came up before that was this afternoon, I'm walking onto the course. I see Joel Damon. I go over. He's playing a practice round with JJ Spahn. I'm chit-chatting, catching up, whatever. JJ Spahn comes over from the green, and he goes, oh, yeah, like, which one? Somebody from your show say I'd be lucky to if I could hold the door open for Tiger Woods at the Masters? And I immediately was just threw Frankie right into the bus. I was like, yeah, that had to be Frankie. And I started to kind of think in my head in real time, like, what the fuck did we say? Because I don't know what we say on the show. And I started to be like, you know what? We were talking about Tiger returning and how that just dominates every storyline. It doesn't matter. And then somehow Frankie, I believe, said something along the lines of like, oh, yeah, who? Like, JJ Spahn just won a tournament. He can't even hold the fucking door open for Tiger Woods this week.
That. But the context behind it is
so
that
he does not like
it. Yeah, and they called me. And then he goes, what's up, pizza boy? That's what he said.
Jake loved that.
And then he fucking flipped me off just now. So we got a
he said it loud, too. The pizza boy thing. Frankie, Riggs was talking to him. And Frankie and I were a little bit behind. And we were walking, I think, what was that, the 18th hole here at Southern Hills?
Yeah.
And he just, Frankie and I were walking up. We're probably 50 feet away. And he goes, hey, pizza boy.
And it's good. I need that. It's like, it's a humbling experience. I need to be knocked down a few pegs.
We're talking about Tiger Woods earlier this week. We got to get knocked down at some point.
We got to get knocked down a few pegs. I'm the first person to admit I am a fucking loser out here. So if JJ Spahn wants to, like, you know, shit on me a little bit, then he has every right to. I want him to know. I got a little something in my mouth. I want him to know that when we were talking about it, there's audio confirming this. I was saying that because Tiger Woods is playing in the Masters, it's such a big story that, like, the dude that just won the Valero after, I mean, he had an insane amount of starts before he even won a tournament. It was like,
that was his first win.
It was like 195 starts or something like that. Won the fucking Valero. I'm like, it's, and then he got into the Masters by only winning the Valero. I'm like, that's the best storyline of a regular tournament going into that week, every other week, except for the Masters when Tiger Woods is playing. I got something in my mouth. And, Tiger Woods winning makes this guy like the doorman. You know what I mean? Like the guy who usually is the biggest story. Shout out to JJ for winning a tournament because I watched him win that tournament. I watched that tournament being like, oh, fuck, that's awesome. Even that guy couldn't hold the door open for the guy that's about to play and barely make the cut. You know what I mean? Like that's how big Tiger Woods is.
Here's so, what happens.
Fuck you, JJ.
Here's what happens. You know what happens? And this has happened to you before with Abraham Answer at the President's Cup. When you start getting riled up about Tiger, we just start saying stuff.
Sure.
And you said you wanted Tiger to end Abraham Answer's career.
You start slinging it.
Which I still want Tiger Woods to have beat Abraham Answer so badly that he never wants to play the game of golf. Right. That's how much I love Tiger Woods.
And I think in that
are we
moment.
Not allowed to have are we not allowed to root for our fucking guys?
No, but you got
to
be ready for JJ Spahn's going to hear that. He's going to give you the finger and call you
but
pizza boy.
I still right. gave him. It was like a. It was like a. It was a. Not a backhanded compliment. I guess it was. It's a backhanded compliment where you're like, hey, congratulations on winning.
Compliment. It wasn't
it's,
a compliment.
It is. I see what you're saying where you're saying.
I was like, that was complimentary of how well he played the week
like,
before.
Man,
how awesome of a story it should be.
Should be the biggest story, but you got fucking Big Dick Eldrick walking through that door.
That's not that bad of a comment.
He probably heard it in a different way, JJ Spahn, yeah. I would imagine.
It's all right.
That's a funny little rivalry. You always get caught in these things.
That's fine. That's fine.
We'll have him on the show one day and have him call you Pizza Boy, and it'll be fun.
I thought we were going to have him over there for a second. I thought it was going to be fun, and he flicked Frankie off and just walked away.
At the PGA Championship. That's insane. No, it's nuts. I mean, I deserve it. There's no doubt about it.
I respect it. I respect every. It.
What's up, buddy?
What's up?
How's it going?
How are we doing?
What's going on?
Good to see you,
man. How's
everything?
Well, not much. We're doing this live podcast. How are you doing?
Hey.
Not every joint.
Sweating my tits off.
Yeah, you are.
It's hot out here.
It's hot out here.
Do you know what time it's supposed to get hot?
All not day. Yet.
Is this live for real?
Well, no, it's recorded, but live to tape, I think they say.
Rangers?
Fuck you.
What?
I'm an Islanders fan, dude.
Islanders.
He'll give you one.
Well, the Rangers are playing really good.
No,
I'm not. Okay. I'm a Blues fan.
Makes me
lost
sad.
Last night. How you doing?
How are you doing, dude?
You're sweating mad.
They got me doing a sound check right now. I'm just listening.
There's a lot.
How is this all going, by the way?
I did it last week for the Byron. I fucking loved it, dude.
You love this?
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun just to, you know, it's fun to get in there.
Yeah.
Part of the action. I love K.H. Lee. He's like he's a sweetheart. So
great quote from him. I want to be the best player in the world, but then I want to be the sexiest person in the world.
They're talking
about okay. All right. Go do your thing.
All right.
Go do your thing.
Bye.
Not ever. He's going to be on the live coverage. He has an ESPN thing on him.
Who's calling you?
Joe, what's up? You pocket dialing me right now?
Joe Griner.
Oh.
Caddy of Max Homer.
Who played in the Tulsa Tango last night. This show's kind of all over the place, which
I think
I love.
He was just pocket dialing me.
Oh, wow. Ooh, you should listen to that.
Well, the thing I thought he was going to be like, okay, I just ran into JJ Spawn. What the hell's going on with
Frank? I got odds on JJ Spawn. He's on the range. I can barely see him because he's so short.
I'm sorry.
I mean, call me a pizza boy. It's like I'm a fucking.
Well, it's funny because, okay, 5 minutes ago, you were like, it's a miscommunication. And now you're like, you're that guy's a short little bitch.
Excuse me, it's miscommunication.
I call him bitch. I just said I can barely see him over that fucking grain of rice.
All right.
In front of him?
Behind him.
Behind him?
Yeah, because he's in front.
I see.
The grain of rice would have to be behind him.
You guys are going to have a reconcile.
We will have one because, you know what? It's one of the only tournaments. That like wasn't a really big tournament. It was the Valero fucking Texas Open.
Okay.
That I sat there and watched, and like really got invested in his story, and thought it was cool. And it was before Tiger had committed to the Masters. And I remember writing in a notes app, being like, "To talk on pod tomorrow, JJ Spawn, cool story, 100 something starts." So this whole thing's been turned on my head, and now I have to have a rivalry with this guy. It's the only guy I watched
like
all
state,
year.
For the record, I love JJ Spawn.
I like him too.
I'm a huge fan.
Big fan of his.
He was the first guy to tee off at the Masters this year. I know a lot about the guy.
Yeah.
He was in the first group.
Seems like you guys are tight.
No one even knew because
good
Tiger
relationship.
Was playing.
all right,
JJ Spawn tees off in the Masters and Tiger's there. Did he actually tee off?
That's from the gallery by Truly Hard Seltzer. Go to trulyhardseltzer.com. Check out where you can get some.
So I got a laugh from the crowd there.
Yeah, you're fishing for some support right now.
I want it on record saying
Trent and I have to distance ourselves from your stance.
I don't
want to
fight JJ Spawn because he'll beat the shit out of my dainty little body.
You said you couldn't see him behind a grain of rice.
He'd still beat the shit out of me.
Yeah, I think that's true. Okay, that was from the gallery. Great time.
There's no way I'm going to put that in the show, are we?
We're about to throw it down Shipnook, who's just incredible. A phenomenal, phenomenal interview. One of the better writers in the world of golf, has been for decades. Great guy. And he wrote an awesome book that's absolutely taken over the golf world in a lot of ways over the last few months at different times. It's popped up. Now it's out. It's available. Phil, the rip-roaring.
Unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar.
Bang. Anybody in Scottsdale, in the Arizona area, come to Casamigos. We're going to be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, pretty much from 11 a.m. all the way until coverage ends. Live feed, live stream, PGA Championship watch party. Let's go Tiger Woods. Let's go Rory. Let's go TaylorMade. Let's go Kiz. Let's go everybody. Hit it hard. Here's Alan Shipnook.
Hit it hard.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined, I believe, for the first time on the show.
You never write. You never call.
Yeah, we're going to get to all that. We have a man who's hot in the streets right now, has been for several months, for years really, but especially last few months, Alan Shipnook, Fire Pit Collective with our boy Matt Janella, so I have to mention that.
Thank you.
Go check out everything you guys do there, and then you're a little bit all over the place. You write for a lot of different outlets, you cover a lot of different things, but the latest is obviously the book on Phil, which we've read. How's it feel to have it kind of out now and be done with it?
Yeah, it's a relief because, you know, we put that excerpt out in February, and you would never usually drop an excerpt that far from publication date.
Right.
It was just all that Saudi stuff was coming to a boil, and I felt like I had almost like a fiduciary duty to get it out into the world because people needed to have all the cards on the table and make, you know, decisions about what's really happening here. And so it's created this long run up.
What was that decision like to release that?
I was one who had to press publish, and, you know, my finger hovered for a second because I knew things were going to get a little squirrely. I honestly never imagined it would blow up the way it has. And some very smart people in the golf world had read the manuscript, and they, you know, we knew it would be controversial, but Phil has talked his way out of so many controversies in the past.
Yeah.
He's a master manipulator of the media, and never in a million years thought he'd be in this exile for this long. But to answer your question, to get the book out now, people can read it in its totality and see that it really is like a fair, balanced look at a really complicated guy. It's a relief because the world we live in, you know, the excerpts, they have to be a little sexy to get people's attention. Like, yep. I said to my editor, what if we do like an excerpt about Phil's philanthropy and all his random acts of kindness? He's like, nobody cares. Nobody's going to read that.
No.
People like the negative stuff, essentially. Yeah.
Or even just the stuff that has some sizzle. So, so I'm happy the book's out and people can judge it in full.
Give me the full title then, Phil, the rip-roaring...
Yeah, and unauthorized...
And unauthorized...
Biography of golf's most colorful superstar. Apologies on how long it is.
No, I like it. Okay. I will say my... And Trent and I talked about this on Sunday when we got to Tulsa. My takeaway, my biggest takeaway from the book was shockingly different than I expected it to be, to the point where I actually think I came away liking Phil more than I did going in. And Phil is such an interesting case in that Phil is someone who everyone has heard a ton of rumors about. Everyone uses the word phony. And I've heard he's this. I've heard he's that. Every person that, you know, is representative of the normal golf fan back home, one of my buddies, whatever, that now finds me in this weird situation where I kind of, you know, they think I know more than I do, ask me, like, what do you hear about Phil? Because, you know, everybody has that. And the book, I thought, did such a good job of sort of addressing that. Of like, here's a story about some really, really genuinely good things Phil has done for people that you probably haven't heard about. And then here's a story about Phil that might be a little bit more, you know, sketchy on his character. And so my biggest kind of takeaway is that there were dozens and dozens of stories of him and Amy doing phenomenal things for people that if you've never heard about them, clearly they weren't doing them for press. They just were doing them as good people.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think, like, you they throw around the word phony, and that's in the book, and people do say that about Phil, but you use the word complicated, and I think that's a good way to put it, because like Riggs said, there's all those stories in there that are just like, that's not a great reflection of Phil. But then the one that stuck out to me was the Ryan Palmer story, where as soon as his wife, you know, gets diagnosed with breast cancer, he pulls Ryan Palmer aside and is like, here's the people you're going to talk to. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to get the best, you know, medical people in this field. And it all worked out. So I think phony it could be, or it could be complicated. And I think if you read the whole book, and I think it's a very fair and balanced look at Phil, I think he is incredibly complicated. That's the best way to put it.
Well, I mean, I appreciate both you guys saying that, because that was ultimately my goal. Like, I'm not here to tell people what to think about Phil. It's just like, I'm just laying it all out there in all the contradictions, which we all have as humans, but his are exaggerated because it's been such a big life.
Right.
He's such a big personality. He just chews all the scenery. And so, yeah, it's a little bit of a journey on this book. And I've had people say, like, when I was done, I was confused. Like, I don't know how I feel about Phil. And, and to me, that's a compliment as the biographer, because I don't want to tell you what to think. Like, this is all that I know and all that I could get in print. And now you make up your mind. And so,
yeah,
but I appreciate that from you guys. And there are so many multitudes within Phil, and people ask me that all the time. That's one of the reasons I did this book, is like, what is Phil like? And so everything you've heard is true. He can be incredibly charming and generous. He can be an asshole. He can be manipulative. He's got all of these parts of his personality, and that's what makes him so interesting.
Which is true of like almost everyone, right? I mean, to some degree, it's, you know, I really liked, because you were, when you first kind of started to discuss in the book, the gambling stuff, and you had a line in there that was sort of like, to be honest, nobody would really care about any of this because it's not illegal to be just, I mean, if you bet and lose your own money, who cares? Reminded me a little bit of the Michael Jordan stuff, when people were trying to, you know, find ways to kind of drag down this absolute superstar, Michael Jordan. People are like really hammering the gambling thing. And during playoffs, and he went down to Atlantic, so people are like, well, you can go gamble. That's totally fine. You can spend your money however you want. I wrote down this quote from Hunter Mahan, who said, he's not phony. He's just kind of goofy. I've never seen any kind of fake side to him, and I've never seen him be rude to any person. So when it comes to the word phony with Phil, how do you think it applies?
Yeah, I mean, one of these critiques you hear from his colleagues is, oh, he's just out there signing autographs as like public relations. Like, if the worst thing you can say about somebody is he's too giving to the fans, and, oh, you know, he leaves all that money for the locker room attendants, he's like showing off. Well, these are the guys cleaning the shoes. Like, they could appreciate that $1,000.
Right.
Know? Like, if that's the worst thing you can say about somebody, they're doing pretty well. So I think Phil's aware that it helps his legend to give the girl at the lemonade stand $100, but it's also, he doesn't have to do that. And like, you know, there's just this little throwaway thing in the book, but there was this waiter at Augusta National who was up for promotion, and Phil wrote him a letter of recommendation. Like, he does not have to do that. Oh. Like, he does care. He does, they said this about Arnold Palmer, like, no one could have as much fun being Arnold Palmer as Arnold Palmer did. And it's kind of the same with Phil. He loves being Phil Mickelson and the grand gesture and all that stuff. He thrives on that. But then, you know, there's things in the book where he gets in people's face and he's, you know, like they even tried to co-opt me, you know, his attorney calling and offering to make me a consultant as Phil's going to take on the tour. It's like, that is the most glaring conflict of interest. I cannot take Phil's money while in the middle of writing a book about it. I'm like, duh. But that, they're always working an angle.
He's like, hey,
yeah,
sure,
yeah. They're always working an angle. Phil never opens his mouth out an agenda. So it's just part of his inherent contradictions that he can be so magnanimous and he can be so petty.
So the first time I really got to speak to you quite a bit about the book was in October. We were abandoned. And you were giving me tidbits, talking through me, you know, the process and how, you know, you would obviously, you let Phil know that that's coming and here's kind of what I got. And then, you know, a month or so after that was when you had the conversation and you got the comments and the quotes that obviously the entire world has read now. You know, were you surprised that Phil called you up?
I was. I mean, I went to Phil 3 times face to face and asked him to sit for interviews for the book over like about a 5-month period. He thought about it, he mulled on it, and ultimately he said no, which was fine. I've had so much access to Phil through the years and his people. I didn't really need him. I explained to him I thought it was in his best interest to tell his side of every story and do a little spin, but whatever. And so fast forward 10 months, the book is due December 1st. It's now Thanksgiving weekend. Like, I'm done with the book. I'm putting the last coat of polish on it. And after I had that weird exchange with his lawyer, you know, Phil texts me, says, hey, can we talk? I was like, of course. I've been trying to talk to you for a year. And given that he turned me down, I was surprised. But when you know Phil, and it's been said many times, he has to be the smartest guy in the room.
Oh, yeah.
And he just couldn't help himself. He had to tell me that he had gamed the system and he was smarter than Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner. He was smarter than Greg Norman, the mouthpiece for the Saudis.
Yep.
And he'd cut all these backroom deals and he was so proud of himself. And so ultimately he didn't want to talk to me. He said no, but he could not help himself. And it tells you a little bit about Phil. Like, he's always stirring the pot and he always has an agenda. And I mean, like, take the 2014 Ryder Cup, which I think is a fascinating part of Phil's legacy. Was he fueled by grievance because Tom Watson benched him? Of course.
Yep.
Did he enjoy flaying Tom Watson in front of the world on a personal level? No question.
Yep.
But it was also a very principled stand where he's like, we've been getting our teeth kicked in for 20 years. I'm tired of losing. We need change. And the only way it's going to happen is if I make this a very public issue. And so he put his neck on the chopping block. And now the U.S. has won 2 of the last 3 Ryder Cups. They're probably going to win the next 5. And a lot of that dates back to...
You've said that before.
Yeah, I know. Let's move on.
New question.
Yeah. So... You know, that was Phil as an agent of change, and he's always saw himself that way. You know, smacking the moving putt at Shinnecock, was that petulance and childish because he was playing crappy? Yes, but it was also the USGA had lost control of the golf course yet again. All the players were pissed. Yeah, exactly. And Phil wanted to make that public, and a lot of players were cheering for him. So he's not afraid to put himself out there, which I respect, and he's talked his way out of it before, but this time, you know, he kind of lit himself on fire.
So we're at the PGA Championship. He is the defending champion, and he's not here. That's an incredibly rare, rare precedent. Almost never happens, especially for someone who is healthy and could play. Are you surprised he's not here?
Yes and no. I mean, I have people who are DMing me photos and videos of playing golf all around San Diego. I haven't posted them. It feels a little too invasive, but the swing looks good. He looks like he's put on a little weight. He's got a little beard, but I mean... He's playing golf a lot, so I can't speak to how well he's playing, but he's out there grinding to some extent. But I think the ground has shifted beneath Phil's feet so quickly. He's gone from this beloved elder statesman, and he's taken like this heel turn, and now he's like kind of a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he's caught between these two worlds. Is he going to pledge his fealty to the PGA Tour? Is he going to go all in with the Saudis? And that whole situation is so chaotic, you know, with without getting in the weeds there. Like, we don't know what's going to happen, and it's probably headed for court. And I think Phil was just not ready to return to public life where there'd be a lot of tough questions. And he would sort of have to pledge allegiance to one side or the other. And so I think this was just about buying time, see who's going to be the first guy to break the blockade, go over to London and play in that Saudi event. It might be him. It might not. And he's just not ready yet for the tough questions.
Right. That's the conclusion that we kind of came to, where we were asking, like, why hasn't he shown up? Why didn't he play at the Masters? Why isn't he playing in the PGA? And what it probably comes down to is he doesn't have the answers that people want to hear, or he doesn't have the answers himself. Because it's easy to say, just show up, take your beating a little bit, get asked the hard questions and give the answers. But if you don't have the answers that you think you should be giving, or that you even have in your own brain, then you just don't show up, I guess. And it builds the swell even more, but it might be better. Apparently he's calculated in his mind that that's better than showing up and giving answers that are just going to, people are going to tear him even more.
Right. And I mean, he's even sort of taken the fifth, like, to not even put out a statement about not defending the PGA. That was bizarre.
Yes.
Like, and just let it's up to the PGA of America to put out some milquetoast tweet. Like, that was weird. But I think he's afraid anything he says is going to be the wrong thing. And so he's just gone underground.
Which is so, such a reversal for Phil Mickelson, right? Yeah. I mean, he can talk his way out of things, as you've described in phenomenal detail for hundreds of pages. That's what he does. And if there's ever a situation that, like, okay, someone is clearly up against it, they've done a heel turn, they're getting it bad from the media, people have piled on, if there's one person that really could artfully talk their way out of it, and inevitably will, right, which you put in the book, that, like, there will be a moment he's thumbs up at everyone, and that we're going to clearly get back to that point. The public forgets very quickly. Things blow over. I'm just shocked that he hasn't just shown up yet and taken his licks, because he's going to have to do it eventually anyways.
Yeah, he's just not ready. And it's complicated because the people around Phil are a little problematic, and his agent and his lawyer, who are kind of his two, you know, consularities, they're not talking to each other. And you've heard a lot of stuff. We don't know what's going on with Phil and Amy. There's just, like, I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and that adds to this dissonance where Phil's just not ready to take a stand because he doesn't even know what he believes in. And he's at a real crossroads professionally and personally, because I think if he comes back and he says, you know what, I thought I was just being a tough businessman. Maybe I overplayed my hand. I'm sorry. I love the PGA Tour. I'm just here to sign autographs and have fun. People will forgive and forget.
Instantly.
Especially with Tiger Woods here playing and taking over all the coverage. Like, it would just be that thing that he does.
Yeah.
You know, we see him. And it's, to me, as just a Phil, I'm a fan of Phil. I'm a lefty. I've always loved Phil Mickelson. I just want to be able to see him go out there and answer those questions. And I get it if he doesn't have them. It's just, it makes me think that the worst of the worst is actually happening when I don't hear anything from him.
Well, I mean, that you can't call it an apology, but his public statement in February, when he kind of took this leave of absence, that last paragraph where he said, I failed a lot of people, and I need to work on being a better man.
Yep.
That felt like it was a lot bigger than the Saudis. Like,
big time.
That kind of read like a cry for help. And so, you know, I become this clearinghouse. Everyone's calling me and tweeting me and DMing me, like, everything they've heard. I've heard every possible rumor, innuendo, what could or could not be happening in Phil's life. I don't know what to believe anymore. There's so much. But he's clearly dealing with some stuff that is beyond golf. But again, there's a road back. I mean, however, if he goes all in with the Saudis after everything he said about them and us knowing his true feelings, and after being educated on the toxicity of their dirty money and how it's still an emotional issue for a lot of Americans, because they did supply 15 of the 9/11 hijackers and they did assassinate a Washington Post reporter who was a resident of the United States. If he still goes all in with the Saudis, it's going to be a lot harder for Phil to get that love back, because I think a lot of fans will be turned off. And so he's at a monumental decision between guaranteed money versus goodwill versus trying to get back in good grace of the corporate America versus this need to be an agent of change and be vindicated and prove that he was right. And there's a lot there. And so I think that's why Phil's not here. He just needs more time to let it marinate.
He's trying to crunch those numbers.
Well, right. And another thing is that what you talk a lot about in the book is, what is Phil's financial situation? Like, where are we at with that? Like, how badly does he need the Saudi money? How badly, like, what is his current financial situation? For a guy who was making $40 million a year at one point, like, what is he actually, like, what does he need right now? And I think that's a huge question for him.
That is. Like, you mentioned Michael Jordan's gambling. It theoretically didn't affect his career, right?
He even said that. He was just kind of like, but it's
I'm a competition junkie.
Right.
But where it gets interesting with Phil is, you know, it's in the book, the scale of his gambling losses, like, deep into eight figures just during this 4-year period that was scrutinized by the government as part of the Billy Walters insider trading. So now you have to ask, like, why is he chasing the Saudi money so hard? He's threatening to blow up the entire world order of professional golf and reshape the entire landscape. And why? And part of it is he wants to be right, and he wants to be this revolutionary. Like, he sees himself as like Thomas Paine and pleated pants. But it's also, you know, it feels like maybe there's a more necessity when it comes to that Saudi money.
Right.
And so that's where it gets really interesting, because, you know, I've heard from people in the game, oh, he already took a huge advance from the Saudis. You don't want to owe those guys money.
No.
Like, nope. They're the last people you want to owe money to. And so now,
if you don't owe them money, you're in dicey territory. Now you owe them a lot.
I mean, look at the positions that Greg Norman has put himself in. We don't know anything, but it's like, it sure seems like he's got a lot more invested than just
what
like,
about your
I
position?
Want this.
Have you felt nervous about being in the mix of all this?
Yeah, I've heard that. Clearly, if the Saudi Arabians are going to execute 80 people in the town square, they don't really care about public relations. Like, they're just going to do their thing.
Yeah.
But
true.
So, no, but it's not like I'm sleeping with one eye open, but it's definitely
there's your mind.
Yeah. I did get an email today from a guy who's got a Saudi Arabian government email. He's like, please call me so we can clarify a few points. I'm like, okay, I'll call you right back.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
I mean, me nervous having you on the show.
Yeah.
I'll call you from the
Let me just hide behind Trent here.
This interview may never hit the airwaves.
It's all jokes aside.
Who's Alan Shipnow?
Like, that is something to kind of, I mean, did you factor any of this stuff in when deciding to write this book? Like, not only that, but also affect someone else's life, whether it be negatively, positively, or whatever. Like, when doing something like this, does that really affect you?
Yeah. I mean, there's a human element. And I will say that I was told something that would have been very headline making for the book. But the people that it directly affected, I spoke with them and they begged me not to use it because it said it's turned their life upside down.
What was it?
And yeah. So let me whisper in your ear real quick. And, you know, it's really harmed them. And they confirmed it. I mean, I pretty much had it cold, but I'm not a monster. I don't want to like send these people back to therapy or whatever it might be. Like, it's really been a big thing in their life. And so it's not in the book. And, you know, even
those are tough decisions.
They're tough decisions. And there's even stuff that I know to be true that was about Phil's family that felt too personal. I took it out. Like, and I mean, I sent Phil a long request for comment when I was done with the book that had all the juiciest stuff. He never got back to me. He went, his lawyer called me. And one of the things I said, like, are you sure you want to say this? And the lawyer came back and said, yeah, Phil would appreciate it if you take that out. And I said, okay, I will, because, you know, there are certain lines I don't want to cross. And, you know, everyone is entitled to a life with some privacy. Now, when you get to the issue of the betting, it really becomes a real thing that's affecting professional golf. Right. Like I would say at that point, you've kind of forfeited the right to privacy when you might blow up the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And so, on that issue,
you might exercise the right to privacy on other issues.
Yeah. And like, you know, one of the big questions was, why did Phil and Bones end their relationship after 25 years? They seemed like brothers, right? Mm-hmm. And they put out these chummy, like, you know, his and her press conferences or press releases. But you may have observed this too. If you're at tournaments, you could sense a little edge there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I saw them walk past each other without even looking at each other. And there's plenty of player and caddy breakups where they still wrap it out on the putting green.
Right.
And there's still a kinship there. Like, they've been in the arena together. But that was totally absent. And so, like, to get to the bottom of that was a great mystery. And, again, you could say, well, it's just their business. But when they're out on the golf course between the ropes, like when Bones was moonlighting for Justin Thomas and they were paired with Phil, you know, a couple of years ago, and there's an energy and an edge, and it felt like it's affecting the competition. I think that, again, this now becomes part of the public domain. Like, there's something going on here that is of value into understanding why it might be affecting performance, why it's affecting the way they conduct themselves at tournaments. So there were a million judgment calls in this book. And I will say, I'm the keeper of so many secrets because everyone wanted to tell me everything. And a lot of it was off the record. Some, we had these ornate agreements about how it would be sourced. I flew off to see this guy who's done a lot of gambling with Phil. Like, not only would he not let me record it, I couldn't even bring my phone into the room or a pen or a piece of paper. Like, he wanted no evidence we'd ever talked.
Yeah.
And he told me something else that was an absolute bombshell. But it was off the record and I couldn't use it. And it's like, it hurts.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it crushes me as a reporter and information gatherer, but we had an agreement and I always honor those agreements.
It's just good to hear from our side because you want to know that the world actually continuously goes like that. Like, I don't want it to always be where everyone's trying to get other people just to get them. You know what I mean? And the fact that you did your due diligence with this, you have all these things, because, you know, people's lives get ruined. People make mistakes and you talk about that. And it's awesome to hear that, you know, how you went about this. It's really
journalistic integrity.
Well, you have to have it.
I mean, I appreciate that. And again, my goal, and people have said, because reading the excerpts, you kind of got, as you said, you got a little flavor of the book, but you didn't get the whole meal. And so before people have had a chance, they're like, oh, is this a takedown of Phil? Were you out to get him? I said, no, I like Phil. I've always enjoyed being around him. It's been a great joy to cover him because think about when he came out in the 90s, like, who were the big stars? It was like fucking Marco Mira, Lee Jansen.
Faldo.
Yeah, all these boring motherfuckers. Yeah. Now, like, Phil made our lives so much richer as golf fans and people who cover the game.
That was the Charles Barkley part I thought was excellent towards the end when he said, he's quote. Like,
yeah,
he's just like, you know, I've known Tiger, I've known Phil really well. Phil's just really fun to be around, and people are just smiling at around Phil, and people aren't around Tiger. Now, that changed yesterday with us. But, like, I thought that was a really good point of just, like, yeah, I don't know about all the bullshit, but guess what, man? I love being around that guy.
Yeah, no, that's that runs through it. And so it was important for me to capture all that. But there's also the messiness and the controversy, and that's in there, too. So ultimately, I'm just trying to tell the whole tale. And it's like spreading out a big buffet, and you'll take this, and he'll take that, and you'll have a little different – you'll have a little different taste of it. And – I'm not telling you what to eat or what to think. Like, it's just, this metaphor has gone on too long anyway. But the point is, like, it's just, there's something for everybody.
Want a little lemonade?
Yeah. There's something for everybody. And I think there'll be a wide range of reactions. I think people who love Phil will probably love him more because they'll focus on all the philanthropy and all the mentorship. And the people who are Phil detractors, they'll pick out stuff. And I'm interested in the people in the middle who are kind of ambivalent, because that's going to be interesting to see how they react. Yeah.
The stuff that Riggs and I have been talking about the most since we first talked about it was the bone stuff. I think the bone stuff is just really interesting, and a lot of things that just people didn't know about. Yeah. And I think, like you're saying, there's going to be people on either side. I think the people in the middle, which I think we sort of are, is like, that's going to be one of the main takeaways. Cause that stuff was eye-opening, quite honestly.
I said to Trey, I thought that was the most actually salacious of the entire, you know, thing. That was the most surprisingly salacious. And, you know, we know Bone, we were chatting with Bones today for a while. So when it's somebody that you know that also you know people like a lot, and then you hear it kind of went down the way that it went down, you know, that was probably the most negative, I thought, for like a lot of the Phil stuff for me, which was also the most surprising. And it's interesting for you to hear from your vantage point that going in that was all sort of a mystery. You're like, all right, I sense something, there's a little bit of iciness here. Yeah. I gotta get to the bottom of this. You were basically starting from nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd heard some things, but you know, there's always noise surrounding Phil that goes back to the 1990 USA Amateur. You know, it's all laid out in the book. Like, some of those old stuff is hilarious. Like, the 91 Walker Cup, his comment about the Irish women in the gallery. Gosh. Like, that stuff's hilarious. To excavate all that was a joy. But, yeah, I mean, for people who haven't had a chance to read the book or the excerpts or whatever, I mean, money was at the root of that breakup with Phil and Bones. And the FedEx Cup came along. It already had a pretty established payment system. So how do you reconcile this bonus money? They kind of agreed on something. And over time, Phil never paid it off. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And eventually Bones, by his accounting, was owed $900,000. That's a lot of money. A
lot of money.
For anybody, especially a caddy.
Yeah.
And Phil never made him whole until the whole thing was coming apart. And, you know,
it's crazy.
And, but what's, you know, what's interesting is,
for a guy that made $40 million a year at one point.
Yeah.
But how much nice Bones is. But, like, I mean,
right.
But how much
brought us waters and like Snickers today.
He did.
But it's not what you make, it's what you keep. So now it gets into a more interesting question. But then, you know, then there's the 18th hole flags, which in Bones' moral universe is a graver sin than the money, because so we all know that
you could sense it in way, just in the book. It's like that was the thing. The money is one thing.
Yeah.
The 18 pin flags is a big deal.
Yeah. So we all know when the caddy takes the 18th hole flag, that's their trophy. They don't get a big Wanamaker trophy.
Hideki Matsuyama's caddy made it super famous.
Iconic.
Unreal.
And so Phil always kept those flags, and he gave them to his grandfather, who taught him the game and was like the North Star in his life. And so Bones didn't love that, but he kind of understood it was a special relationship. And that went on for 21 victories. And then, sadly, Al Santos dies at the ripe old age of 97, had an amazing life. And telling his story was fun, too, by the way.
Yeah, it was great.
And, and so now they keep winning tournaments, including, you know, four majors. And Phil's still keeping those flags. And Bones is like, what the hell? Like, him and his wife would host, you know, players and caddies during the Phoenix Open. And people would come to their house like, where are all the flags? And it bothered him in a fundamental way that none of us could ever really understand. And I mean, it'd be like the equivalent of, you guys aren't allowed to wear the Barstool logo. Riggs won't let you wear it. Too bad.
Right.
You know?
You'd be like, well, I mean,
why me?
Riggs owes me money, but it's kind of ridiculous you won't let me wear the fucking logo.
Like, you can never wear the logo.
What an asshole. And, give me the logo.
It's like a sense of power over him, too, right? It's like, and I own this and you don't.
And so it's, you know, the money times the flags.
I don't know.
Yeah, the money times the flags plus some other stuff, like, it led to this very acrimonious breakup that nobody really knew about. And so to lay it all out there, and, you know, poor Bones, like, he's on the Golf Channel because he has his knees replaced and he needs a little break from lugging the bag, and he has to talk about Phil, and he's like super chipper and, you know, insightful, like, and poor guy was kind of performative, but that was his job. That was the role he had to play. And when you think back on it now, you're like, damn, like that guy should get an Academy Award.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Right? Yeah.
Would you like a delicious drink, Trent and Frankie, that's good for you, Trent and Frankie, that has electrolytes, vitamins, antioxidants, coconut water, and tastes great, Trent and Frankie?
Yes.
I would love that.
Do you know what that
might
be? I
love coconut water. So if we can put coconut water in everything, I'm in.
Body Armor Light.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about.
So good.
Is the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. We are active this week. We're all over the map.
I have Body Armor stocked in my fridge at home. I got a really cool fridge. It's got a little screen on it.
Electric fridge? Wow.
That thing's like a magic trick.
Dude, it's crazy.
I couldn't figure it out. Screen?
The fridge is insane.
Your fridge has a screen?
Yeah.
Like it's a guy who helped
me
out.
I have a guy who helped me out.
Does it talk?
A PC Richards, who essentially got me like a bundle of the coolest TV and the coolest refrigerator. I'm not saying it fell off the truck, but I got a good deal.
Well, if you're doing every podcast being like, hey, if there's a refrigerator guy out there,
you know,
couch guy house. Out there.
I had to pay for it,
table guy out there.
That refrigerator is, it's technologically
that's
advanced.
That's why I'm traveling the fucking world, pay for that one refrigerator. but I will say I have it stocked with Body Armor Light, and that's not even a joke or just for the ad. It's right there on the right side. I've got their huge bottles, and I have them lined up on the right side. I love the flavors. No matter what flavor I pick up, I'm telling you right now, it's so refreshing. You have the competition. It doesn't give you the refreshing quenching of the thirst that Body Armor does. It's lighter. It tastes closer to water, but it has the taste. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Sometimes the other ones get phlegmy, and it just, you drink them when you're soaking hot and you're sweaty, and you drink a competition of Body Armor. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about the competition. And you end up just, ugh.
Body Armor Light.
Body Armor goes right down, man. I'm telling you.
Body Armor Light is delicious. You get all flavors on Amazon. Go check it out. That's what we drink. That's what our super fancy refrigerators that I don't have, but that Frankie has.
I write notes on it. Good morning.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Does it say it out loud? Does it talk?
It does a lot of things, dude. I can see the inside refrigerator from my phone right now. See what we're like missing.
What? Like it's a baby camera?
You just like see the shelves.
Unbelievable.
It's wild. It's wild.
We're going to look at that when we're done here.
Yeah.
Why would you need to see the shelves?
If you're at the grocery store, you want to see like, oh, do we have any butter or something? You're like, fucking let me go look on the inside.
I would have the same question. Smart, actually. I would have the same question you had. And then he just answered it with like, the best answer.
Do we have beer in there? Like, oh, yeah.
What is the milk
no
like up and talking? And like, what's going
it's
on?
Like, it's that poor person's like, Toy Story's got to be real. We're putting cameras everywhere.
The butter is now hanging out with the cheese.
This shit's real.
Dude, that what's that?
They're plotting a takeover.
What's that movie where they
it's the Seth Rogen movie.
Seth Rogen where they're all like hot dogs and shit.
Sausage Party.
What a weird movie.
Really Body Armor, movie. Body Armor Light, all flavors are available on Amazon. I want to talk about some of the on the record, off the record stuff because clearly there was a disagreement with the comments about Saudi and Phil claiming that they were off the record. I mean, how is that just a case of just one person just lying?
Yes, and it's not me.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, I went to Phil, you know, three times and asked him to do interviews for this book, and he knew I was dying to talk to him for this book. And there are judgment calls, like you guys know, you're just BSing with someone on the reins, and they say, hey, you know, did you hear that so and so broke his hand in a fist fight in a bar, you know, player caddy, and like, well, that's interesting. You might want to use that on the air, but you'd say. It's not a formal interview. You're just two guys talking. And you'd say, hey, can I use that? And they'll be like, well, okay, but don't use my name. Or okay, but let me clean up the quote. I don't want to say, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. And there's a little dance you do, and that's part of this intimacy between the players and the reporters. But I would submit this is a very different scenario. Like, I have gone to Phil three times, and I've begged him to talk to me. And now he's finally ready to talk to me. And he calls me. He instigates the whole thing. Like, every single syllable is going directly in the book. Unless he tells me otherwise.
That's been made very clear.
It's made exceptionally clear. And he never asked to go off the record. If he had, I would have pushed back really hard because it's a two-way street. Like, it's a consensual relationship, you know?
Right.
And if he had asked, I'd be like, no, dude, this is our only chance to talk. Like, and maybe we'd hash it out and say, okay, you can use this, you can't use that. He just started talking. And he opened a vein. And it goes to his motivation, like, why? Mm-hmm. And I just think... Phil was so desperate to show me how smart he was and that he was smarter than everybody else in the game and that he had masterfully pulled all these levers of power. And it just, he couldn't help but tell me. And, you know, when he picked up the phone, did he mean to tell me everything? I don't know. I mean, you guys know this from your job. People start talking, they get carried away, they get emotional.
Trent had to like defend Ukraine one time in a draft about alcohol.
I don't want to bring that up. I don't want to talk about that.
Draft making a point.
I don't want to talk about that right now.
He said white Russian
Is that what it was?
It was, yeah.
Drink?
Yeah. And you had and already drafted.
You almost got canceled.
I pretty much, and then just running downhill.
I like, drafted draft about cocktail drinks, and he had to say, I support Ukraine, and I'm not.
He came out, and he's like, boys, it got really sideways. And then we're like, what happened?
Why did you just draft like a margarita?
I felt like I was on fire. When I was just like, my whole body was engulfed in flames. But that's how it is.
Yeah, so, you know, how far Phil wanted to go, I can't say, but it's not my job to give him guardrails. Like, he tiptoed to the edge of the cliff, and he looked down. He's like, ooh, that looks refreshing. I can take the plunge. Like, I'm not the lifeguard. Like, this is not a jittery rookie doing his first ever interview. This is a master manipulator of the media. This is a guy who spent his whole career charming and bullying and cajoling reporters, and that's all in the book, too. And the idea that he would tell me anything I didn't want to know for this book is it's nonsensical. Like, Phil, he never opens his mouth without an agenda.
Right.
And now, he wildly underestimated the blowback. And honestly, so did I. Like, I knew what he was saying in the moment was going to be controversial and was going to provoke a reaction. Like, I never imagined he'd be sent into exile for all these months. And after I was done
kind
with the book.
Self-sent to exile, too. It's a kind of a combo.
But, like, some really smart people in the game read the manuscript, and my editor and my agent, all these people. No one flashed on it. Like, we talked about a lot of other things. Like, not one person said, wow, this could end Phil's career. Like,
really?
It just, because when you read the whole book in the context, it almost feels inevitable. Something's coming, right? He'll
win and then he'll say something stupid.
Yeah. Like, you start with the you know, the insurrection at the Ryder Cup. Then you go to Shinnecock Hills. Then you go to him battling the reporter in Detroit about the mobbed up bookie story. And like, Phil has kind of made himself this agent of change and this guy who wants to take things on. So this, you could feel this coming in some ways, but when you get the excerpt, all that's cut away. And so it's a little more glaring, and it's more impactful that way and stripped away of some of the context. So again, that's why I'm glad people get the whole book and they can see it, how the whole thing unfolds. But it's a wild turn of events, and I never could have predicted it.
Since those quotes were released, which was the excerpt was released in February, you said?
Yeah.
Have you heard directly from Phil?
The day they dropped, he sent me a text expressing his displeasure. And I wrote back and then had more to say a little bit later. And I texted him again, but it didn't go through. You know, you get that little green line.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
And then some other people told me they've tried to reach out to him. So either I was blocked or he changed his number, but other people couldn't get through either. So I think he just changed his number. And I did send him the book a few weeks ago with a handwritten note, sent it to his lawyer. He said he'd put it in his hands because I did want Phil to see it before the public. And knowing he's probably trying to decide, is he going to play this tournament? Like, I think he deserved to know what's in the book and see that there's not any more earthquakes on the magnitude of the Saudi stuff, and everything else he can survive and he can probably talk his way out of. And so I wanted to give him all the information. I haven't heard back. I haven't gotten a critique yet.
Do you think he's read it? You're just guessing.
Yes, I don't know how you couldn't. Like,
yeah.
if someone wrote a book about your life that's been everywhere and turned your world upside down, I think you'd probably want to read it.
Well, I remember Zuckerberg when, what's the movie I'm blanking on the name?
Oh, Social Network.
Social Network came out. He had said for like a year, he's like, I don't know. And then day one, he went like with his whole staff and they saw the movie. And he's like, it's pretty good, actually.
Anybody who has a book written about them, they read that book.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
Without a doubt. I mean, you know, Phil.
Does that make you nervous? Not nervous, but like uncomfortable, you know, because you have a relationship with the guy.
Yeah. I mean, no, I'm glad he's reading the whole book. And I sent a handwritten note and I said something to effect like, I hope you can read this with an open mind and see that it was written with a lot of affection. And that's the honest truth. Whether he can do that remains to be seen. But I know I'm glad he's getting the whole book. And you can see there's a lot in there that celebrates his virtues. And there's get into the large scale philanthropy he's done and all his mentorship of young players. And he's spread a lot of goodwill through the universe.
A lot.
And I was happy to celebrate that. And I think it's an important part of the book. So, but again, you can't just tell one side or the other. So all the controversy is in there too. And when he sees the whole thing, hopefully he'll be like, okay, I don't love it, but it was fair.
Do you think you and him will inevitably have a long sit down someday?
That's a great question. I hope so. I mean, the book starts at the 1999 PGA Championship when Phil's in my face and he's like saying, just throw the first punch.
Awesome start, by the way. You dive right in.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, we've obviously had our ups and downs interpersonally. As I lay out in the book, you know, I've been to his house. We've dined together. When he won the Open at Muirfield in 2013, I was drinking champagne with him and Amy. Like, we definitely buried the hatchet, and we had a productive working relationship, even if there was always a little edge there. So I would like to think so. And I'll be curious when Phil comes back to public life. Is he going to attack the book and attack me, which is fine. You know, it's
good for sales.
It's good for sales.
Hopefully
it
does.
It's been vetted by a team of Simon Schuster lawyers. I'm not worried about that. Or is this pledge to be a better man? Is he going to maybe this self-reflection he talked about? Maybe he'll say, you know, it was fair and I deserve some of that. And that's a mystery. We don't know, but it'll be interesting. That first press conference, I'm sure I'll be in the room. Like, that's going to be awkward as hell, but you know, for both of
hey,
us.
Hey, Phil. Yeah. Phil, Alan Shipman, you know, fire pit collector over here.
Can we talk about that 7-iron on number 13? Yeah, everyone would be so deflated, right?
Did you catch that a little heavier there? Or what was, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll just go just pure golf. Like,
that'd be amazing.
That'd be amazing.
That's just all you cover with Phil Dowds.
Yeah.
What's with the tweak in the clubs you're using in the bag there? Yeah. Is that you deal off your 3-wood a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there's Phil and I have always had this funny relationship. Like, I mean, this is in the book, but he already knew I was doing it when he went to the November Masters, and I asked him a question in the press conference. You know, he's in that big cavernous room in Augusta National. And he gave some little answer. He's like, I said, you know, is it fun for you to come in here and perform on this big stage? Because he doesn't do too many pre-tournament press conferences anymore. And he's like, yeah, you know, I've kind of kept a low profile, but I'm always happy to come in and see you, Alan. And like, you know, it was like, there's a term I learned when I was in the South called smile fuck. You know, he was kind of smile fucking me. But it was funny. Like, I enjoyed it. And like, we've always had that banter. And so, you know, I'm sure he's mad at me. He may be mad at me forever, and that's part of the job, but we'll see what happens.
I'm always amazed, overwhelmed really, by the book writing process, because it would be overwhelming for me. And when you mentioned vetting it with the lawyers, the sourcing,
juggling the off record, on record.
Is it ever just overwhelming? You're just like, oh man. You got a family, you know, you're coaching well, girls high school basketball. You got a lot going on.
And honestly, so I started work on this book in the summer of 2020. And it was, you know, it was the peak or maybe the nadir of COVID, however you say it. And it was great in that there was no access to players at tournaments, but everyone was home and bored. And I had so many like hour and a half long conversations with the Hall of Fame golfers who had literally nothing better to do than tell me their Phil story. So that was great. Mm-hmm. And then worked on it really hard in the fall into the winter of 21. And then in February of 2021, really launched the Fire Pit Collective and spent 3 months just grinding, you know, day in and day out. And I didn't touch the book for 3 months. And in early May 2021, I called my editor. I was like, I cannot get this book done for 2022. There's just no way. I'm so far behind. He's like, fine, no big deal. It's evergreen. 23 is fine. 24, take your time. And then, you know, less than 2 weeks later, Phil wins the PGA Championship.
Oh.
And that Sunday night, I get a text from my editor. Book's due December 1st. Don't let me down. I was like, fuck!
Yeah, Jesus.
So yeah, it was intense. But it was also, I thrived on the energy. And, you know, like my son, who's 14, he'd come in, say goodnight. I'd be at my desk, it'd be midnight. And he'd like, he's a really affectionate kid. He'd get in my lap and hug me. He's like, I'm sorry you're having to work so hard. I was like, buddy, I'm having a great time. Yeah. Like, this is a blast.
Yeah.
Like, because like during the day, I have my day job, I have my kids, I have all this stuff. And I did most of my writing from like 8 or 9 p.m. until whenever. And the phone, you know, quiets down. Sometimes I even just turn the Wi-Fi off. And that was bliss. Like, I looked forward all day long to getting to that point.
Yeah, interesting.
And so it is a lot to juggle. And, you know, I did hundreds of interviews. And while I have the interview notes, I have the transcripts, like, you kind of have to know in your head what you got.
Right.
And so you can just, you can find it and put it where it belongs. And so the amount of clutter was unbelievable. And every time you finish a chapter, you know, you can close a bunch of tabs on your research and you can kind of cut and paste some interviews, put them in another document. Like, okay, I'm done with that. The college years are over. Like, thank God. And so, you know, I've been doing this not long enough that, you know, that's my 7th book. I have another one coming out later this year. So I've done this, I've been through this process and I kind of know how to compartmentalize and I can already see the chapters before I even write them. And so it gets easier, but yeah, it took over my life for sure.
Man, that's wild. That's just, it's cool. It's what it takes, right? You immerse yourself in it. I feel like you probably are. I imagine it would be weird to in person even see Phil Mickelson now because you've been so immersed in his life.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, my first year covering,
punch you in the face.
I mean, he's been waiting 30. Sales. I mean, he's been waiting a quarter century for someone to throw the first punch.
That's it.
Right.
It's not
good. You might see the book as the first punch.
Well, that's well said, Trent. I mean, believe me, if we square up, I'm ready to duck, man. Like, I mean,
if he plays in a LIV golf event, is all the media going to it? And
So that's interesting. I was just talking to Matt Janelle about this. Like, part of me doesn't want to legitimize it. Like, you know, I've been very critical of the Saudis through the years, and especially in the context of this book.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, we know they're bad actors on the world stage. But on the other hand, this is a big moment in golf. Like, the whole world order of golf is threatening to be blown up. And so I kind of feel like I need to be there, even though it's the week before the U.S. Open, and it's a complicated time. But got kids graduating high school and all this stuff. But I kind of feel like it's going to be a fascinating exercise. The energy around it is going to be unusual. You know, if Phil goes, I'm sure I'm going to go. At least we'll know that a few days ahead of time. But
yeah.
So yeah, it's a big moment for the sport. I mean, it's an existential threat to the PGA Tour, and how this all plays out is going to be utterly fascinating.
There's nothing else like it in the sports world, right?
Nope. Yeah.
I mean, what other league is threatened by an existential league? You know, the XFL is a joke.
Yeah.
It has been forever every time they've tried it.
No, you probably have to go back to the USFL in like the 80s, right? Because that was never going to be the NFL, but they had some blue chip talent and they had some money and they had some TV. Like, the whole thing blew up, but they tried and they made a run at it. But yeah, it's unparalleled. And, you know, these golfers love to call themselves independent contractors. Yeah. That's why they don't go play the Quad Cities and whatever, because they can pick and choose. But the reality is, it's more.
They don't go play the Quad Cities. Where's that? Is that near Iowa?
Zach Johnson.
I mean, some people think it's the fifth major.
It is the fifth major.
What was the year they had zero out of the top 50 players in the world play?
Continue with your point. I was more interested in that one.
My point is, they're not entirely free agents, because if they want to go play in these LIV golf events, they have to ask permission from the tour. And being a tour member confers great benefits. All these humongous bonus programs, the best pension in
ever.
Sports. Yeah. And so it's kind of like having to ask your spouse for permission to cheat on them, you know?
Right.
And they don't always give that permission. And
then claiming that you're single. It's like, well, I mean, not really.
Exactly.
Kind of married.
Yeah. It's messy. And so how this is going to play out is going to be utterly fascinating. And, you know, for the players, they won't say this, but they want the Saudis to succeed, because the dream would be you can keep your tour membership, you can play the FedEx Cup, you can cash the pension, and then you can cherry pick all the Saudi events that you want with these monster paydays. Like, that's the dream scenario for these guys. And if this is sanctioned by an antitrust judge, then it gives them some cover. Like, hey, the federal government said it's okay for me to go over there. It's all good, guys.
Well, one of the great ironies of this whole thing is that Phil has actually been extremely successful.
Yeah.
Like, the tour has had to do all sorts of things in reaction to what this threat has been.
No doubt.
They've
about
had
it.
To come out with the PIP and the bonus, and then raise the PIP and the bonus, and then raise the prize pools for
the
all these tournaments.
The purse is insane.
They're outrageous now. Yeah. People are winning $2, $3, $4 million and they win a tournament because of what they've done. So, ironically, he's gotten what he wanted.
That's part of the irony, or maybe the tragedy of this, is Phil had a lot of good points, and he was actually making progress. Like, he was winning these battles.
Right.
They created this NFT program. That's largely because of Phil's advocacy. And so if he had just maybe stayed the course and not worked both sides so hard, but
just wouldn't have called Alan Shipman night.
I sometimes wish he never called me.
Yeah.
Because, like, the book was done. I was due in a week. Like, I was just, you know, adding a few commas here and there, but it was done. And it already was really lively and really fun. And it was juicy. I had the Bone stuff. I had the Billy Walters. I had the gambling. There was enough stuff in there to satisfy the people who wanted the secrets. And if he hadn't called me, this would be such a different moment for both of us. And, like, I think about that sometimes. I mean, once he told me that stuff, it would have been like journalistic malpractice not to use it. I could never have not. But, like, if he'd never picked up the phone, and by the way, it was a Sunday afternoon during football season. Like, enough people have said to me, do you think Phil was drunk? I've had to think about it. I mean, he's not really that kind of drinker. He's more like a nice bottle of red at dinner.
Yeah, you said he hates the taste of beer.
Which is ironic, because he pimps beer for a living. Like,
I was just going to say, he's maybe having a couple of beers, but that's not Phil.
That's not Phil. So he sounded fine. I don't think he was under the influence, but
you just took advantage. You just, like, public relations, like, took advantage of Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, it's just like, it just happened. And I'm sure he regrets the phone call. I know I think about it all the time. And, like, he used the word reckless in his statement, talking about that whole conversation. He was reckless, but I almost think that was part of the fun for him. He is an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
And whether it's trying to carve a 3-iron around a big Norwegian elm on the 72nd hole at Wingfoot, when he could have just laid up and played it safe, like, I think he kind of got off on telling me these secrets, knowing it was dangerous, but he couldn't help himself. Like, That's my only analysis of the situation. Like, I would
and
not
that
have,
actually makes the most sense.
I would not have known this stuff if you hadn't told me. It's crazy.
You called that drive the worst drive in history.
And go, I mean, first of all,
all it, things considered,
it was 100 yards
worst
offline.
Drive in history.
But with so much at stake, like not only the U.S. Open, which, you know, would have ultimately given him the career Grand Slam in hindsight, but he would have gone to number one in the world. He would have been player of the year. All these things he's never been able to attain. They were within his grasp. And
you said, given the stakes and the result, it could quite possibly be the worst drive in golf history.
There's no question.
We're all safe.
Yeah. That's right. We're good.
Yeah. You can hit one 100 yards offline. It doesn't matter. This was so much at stake. And, you know, obviously we've talked about all these other things. There's a lot of fun golf stuff in this
really
book.
Good golf stuff. Yeah.
Like that chapter on Wingfoot is one, maybe my favorite part of the whole thing.
Awesome.
And like, I read the audiobook for this, which was a great challenge and it was a lot of fun. And I had this little engineer in my ear every time I'd mess up. And he'd always tell me, he said, I know when something exciting is coming because you start reading too fast. And I got to slow you down. That whole chapter, man, I was racing through because I was dying to get to the last hole. And to bring all those voices who are like Monday morning quarterbacking, you got Big Jack, you have Hale Irwin, Andy North, Nick Faldo. Yeah, like all these people who have won multiple U.S. Opens or are these great tacticians and just wilding out on Phil. Like, it's unbelievable. But I was right there. I mean, it's in the book, but I was standing in the fairway with Rick Smith, his swing coach, as Phil was looking over the second shot and trying to decide what to do. And when Phil hit that shot and he caught it, you know, he caught it flush. He was lucky it went in this trampled area. He had a good lie. And it was heading for the tree. It was like in slow motion. And it hit that trunk. It's still the loudest crack I've ever heard on a golf course. It was just, the acoustics were unbelievable. And Rick Smith went ashen. Like, his life just changed, and he knew it. Like, before that ball even stopped rolling, he's done. He's fired. And and it just unspooled from there, like in this horror show. You know, Phil gives his famous, you know, I'm an idiot press conference. And, I mean, he looked... He was wearing a yellow shirt. He turned that color coming up the 18th fairways. Like, the magnitude hit him.
The Ford yellow shirt.
Yeah, exactly. The Ford. And so, you know, part of my job is to go where the cameras can't go. And so after all that plays out, it's like, where's Phil? And so I went into the Wingfoot Clubhouse, which is a great old-timey clubhouse. I've seen it. Yeah. Yep. He's upstairs.
One of my favorite bars in all golf.
Oh, yeah. There at Wingfoot. And those ginger snaps at the turn with the peanut butter. Excellent. Oh, I had like 1,000 of them. And, you know, the fans are in the ceiling. It's all hot and stuffy up there. And, Phil's got his head in his hands and he's just broken.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen an athlete so broken. And Amy comes up and she whispers to me, she's like, I think he's in shock. Like, it was probably a good medical diagnosis. And it was just incredible. And, you know, those are like the little stolen moments that I think give this book like a real intimacy, because I was just there. I've been there for the victories, for the slapstick defeats. I've been in the press tents. I've been in the parking lot. I've been on the putting green. I've been in his freaking souped up golf cart where, you know, we're hitting 50 miles an hour and the tires are chirping on every corner, and he's like admonishing me for not turning, like, you know, I'm like hanging out of it, like, to combat the g-forces. Like, so I've been there. Like, I lived this stuff with Phil, and I mean, it's been a journey for both of us in its own way, and to bring it all together was a great challenge, but it was a heck of a lot of fun.
I love the moments when you guys do one-on-one and he reaches across and turns off the tape recorder to like tell you things.
I mean that's the thing, like, he's so cagey. And so the idea that I somehow outfoxed him in this phone call is ridiculous.
Like
he is a master manipulator. And you know, just this one time he just didn't quite read the room, and he's still the follow-up's ongoing.
Well, look, it's a fantastic read, and like you just described at the end there, I mean, there's probably nobody better to write it. You've been there for all sorts of moments with Phil. So, Alan Shipnuck, go check. It's out everywhere now, right?
Everywhere, yeah.
Give us the title one more time.
Phil, the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar.
Awesome. It's perfect. It's a great read.
The read's faster than the subtitle. Like, we'll get through the book quick.
No, we appreciate it. It's a great read. I highly recommend everybody go check it out.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, guys. This is great fun. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks for coming. Yeah.